Surveillance cameras in Brooklyn caught more than a dozen unidentified people climbing in and out of manholes late at night. One group of seven stayed underground for 3 hours, then came out, changed out of dirty clothes, and drove off in waiting cars. A second group of eight did the same thing nearby. Police found no damage, but the coordinated timing, waiters, flashlights, and efforts to hide their activity have raised serious concerns. This was not random sewer scavenging. America's underground tunnels, sewers, and utility corridors connect directly to power grids, water systems, communications, and transit lines, making them potential weak points in our infrastructure. This New York incident fits into a larger pattern of threats. In Alabama, divers found a grenade-style IED attached to the Converse Reservoir Dam, the main drinking water source for 350,000 people. It was safely removed, but officials called it an unprecedented threat that could have poisoned the water or breached the dam.
As alleged in the complaint, the defendants were inspired by ISIS to carry out their attack. There should be no confusion about what ISIS constitutes. It is a designated foreign terrorist organization responsible for deadly terrorist attacks across the globe and has taken credit for mass casualty attacks in Europe, the Middle East, and right here in the United States.
Similar risks appeared in recent terror activity. In late 2025 and early 2026, there have been multiple attacks and foiled plots, including an Afghan national who killed a National Guard soldier, a truck, and a shooting attack on a Michigan synagogue full of preschoolers, the ISIS-inspired New Orleans truck ramming that killed 14, and various disrupted plots. These included far-left extremists building bombs in California for New Year's Eve attacks on companies and ICE, an 18-year-old ISIS supporter planning attacks on North Carolina stores, and other ISIS-linked plots in Michigan. And now this fool in Newark is staring down a felony for threatening the lives of an ICE officer and his family. Together, the underground probes in New York, the damn device in Alabama, and the steady stream of terror plots shows that America's critical infrastructure is being tested.
If we ask ourselves, as Muslims living in the West,
right, and you drew a distinction between violent change and non-violent
change. Exactly, yeah, okay. Which is the political one. We as Muslims...
You've suggested that non-violent equates to political... But we'll run with that for the moment.
Okay, yes.
Right.
And that's why I'm asking for, a third alternative, and there is no third alternative.
Right.
So the breakthrough comes if you remain in the field. If you leave the field, the breakthrough may come and you are not there, you will miss it. So we have to be as Muslims, as people who care about Islam, we remain in the field. We know what America plans. يَمْكُرُونَ وَيَمْكُرُ اللَّهِ Allah says, they plan and we plan.
You need to know the United States as an economy, as a superpower is falling down. This is the time now, they're weak. It's the time now to go and do jihad and call them to accept Islam and implement Islam on them.
We need full investigations into the Brooklyn sewer incidents, much stronger security around dams, tunnels, pipelines, and utilities, and zero tolerance for anyone scouting or tampering with our lifelines. It is far better to act on these warnings now than to face a reckoning later. John Bound, reporting for the Alex Jones Network.
Nice try, globalist, but Alex Jones is still here, and you can watch the Alex Jones Show live on these platforms: on X at Real Alex Jones, and on Rumble at the Alex Jones Show Live, or go to the website alexjoneslive.com, and don't forget to download the number one news app in the world on Apple and Android, alexjonesapp.com. Share the links now and tell everyone Alex Jones is back and he's not f***ing leaving.
Most banned man in America, Alex Jones. want you all to know something. Alex Jones was right.
Alex is right about far more than he's wrong.
Alex has been right on for over a decade.
I don't care how you slice it, dice it, flip it up, or rub it down. Alex Jones was right.
Think about how frustrated we are if you've been awake for a year or two. Imagine being like an Alex Jones or those guys who've been awake for like decades.
Alex Jones called this years ago. Years ago.
Alex Jones never bought the Russia hoax. Not for a second.
You are one of the great thinkers of this.
You are a martyr to the First Amendment.
The government fears Alex Jones.
That's why the globalists hate me, is because I'm exposing their corporate worldwide tyranny.
Watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this, Tuesday afternoon. Very happy to be here with you. We've got a big news day today. Massive protests breaking out all over the UK. Protesting the racist death of Henry Nowak, the young man who was murdered by a Sikh Indian with his ceremonial blade, who was then allowed to bleed out as the cops handcuffed him behind his back. We showed the video yesterday. It was horrifying and has caused the appropriate outrage. So we're going to cover that. We may be joined in the third hour by Jack Hadfield. He's there on the ground at the protest right now. We'll bring you videos that he's shooting throughout the show today. The problem is, I hit him up. I'm like, can you come on with us at this time? And he goes, maybe, but there's a strike going on. So we're not sure if the tube is even going to be running. We're not sure if the subway system is even going to be able to get him home on time. It's like, isn't that typical? Isn't that exactly what you would expect? We're trying to raise awareness about one horrifying aspect of socialism, their ridiculous socialist system, and we're being foiled by another aspect of their ridiculous socialist system. So hopefully he'll be able to come on with us today and talk about the protests that are currently happening right now in the capital, London. But if not, he'll come on tomorrow and give us a recap of it. But obviously this seems sort of spontaneous. You know, obviously this wasn't a Tommy Robinson style rally where you have months of lead up. This was something sort of spontaneous in the UK. People, I think, are getting fed up with the way that they're being treated. We've got a lot of other stuff to talk about as well, though. We've got Israel making fools out of themselves at the UN. We've got Marco Rubio answering questions about the Iran war to Congress. We have, of course, every day, we have more and more videos of innocent people in places like Lebanon being eviscerated by Israel because they're frustrated that they can't defeat the actual warriors there, Hezbollah. But let me start this way. Let me start the show. Let me back up real quick. So I got a call yesterday from one of our biggest fans, possibly the biggest fan of ours of all time, Matt Baker. Matt Baker gave me a call and he was frustrated. He was frustrated because he was having trouble finding the show. And he was telling me all the stuff, you know, all the trouble he's having trying to find the show. And I'm getting a little frustrated because how do you think I feel? How do you think I don't want my show to be seen? You don't think I'm not trying to, you know, figure out where to send people and, you know, how best to spread the word? So we're like yelling at each other in agreement. It was just very contentious. Not really, but it was kind of like, he's like, you know, you got to spread. I'm like, what do you think I'm trying to do? It's like, I just want people to see your show. And I'm like, I want people to see my show. We're like yelling at each other. Regardless, I'm like, all right, what should I do, man? What should I do? Because if you, our biggest fan ever, is getting frustrated and giving up on finding the show, how do we expect normal people to find it? And he said, here's what you do, Harrison. He gave me this advice. He said, at the very top of your show, the very beginning, in the first 2 minutes, you've got to tell everybody listening to retweet on X right now. Everybody's got to retweet it. We are streaming on X at AJ and Live. Something else, I'm going to start streaming the same show on my account so you can follow me at Harrison H. Smith. But people are still having trouble finding us, even our biggest fans. So I implore, beseech, and beg you, hit that share button. Hit the, in fact, we're not moving on. I'm waiting here until you do it. And you're thinking, but Harrison, I'm not on X right now. Well, you know what? We got time. We got time. You can sign on to X. You can repost it. You can retweet it. And you can help find our lost sheep. We've got sheep out there just wandering around looking for their flock. And here we are. You got to let them know where to find us. So Alex Jones Network at AJN Live on X. That's the way to find us there. We are on Rumble, rather, not Proton. That's the other, you know, privacy and freedom of speech concerned company. But we're on Rumble at The War Room Live, I think. See, I don't even know. I got to get this right. I had him print it. The War Room Live. Okay, The War Room Live, because we did change it, but this is it. The War Room Live on Rumble. So you can go to rumble.com/The War Room Live. That's rumble.com/The War Room Live. Because the problem is not even that, you know, we're hard to find. It's that we have like 1,000 streams. We got people running their own pirate streams. We've got unofficial accounts and official accounts and just sort of amateur accounts of people who, you know, repost our stuff and we don't tell them to, but we love it. So please continue to do that if you're one of these people. We love all the channels, you know, constantly rebroadcasting our stuff. But it can get a little confusing because you're not sure which one's the official one. For War Room on Rumble, rumble.com/The War Room Live. I literally had the crew print this out and I didn't even grab it before doing this, this tangent. So you can tell. I think you can tell why things are the way that they are. But the problem is, you know, I spend hours and hours and hours every day going through the news and trying to figure out what the heck's going on. Who's got time to try to figure out our social media in the background? So anyway, that's my very long diatribe. But big thank you to Matt Baker for keeping us on the ball and trying to find ways to share our stuff. So again, the best way to find it, and of course, you can go to alexjoneslive.com. AlexJonesLive.com has the feeds right there in a big box. You can follow us on Rumble, rumble.com/The War Room Live, and follow me on X at Harrison H. Smith and the Alex Jones Network at AJN Live. And usually, I didn't even do it today, but I will right now. I usually retweet it anyway, so you can usually find it. Whenever we go live, I will retweet the live link. But yeah, folks, if, you know, people can't find us, they'll forget about us. Out of sight, out of mind. You got to share this stuff. Please, we really appreciate it, and it helps more than you'll ever know. And it's free. It's literally the easiest, the freest, the most convenient way to help us at all is, of course, share our links. And the best way to help us is to go to thealexjonesstore.com. Now, here's my problem. If you go to Live on X, and you click the button, it doesn't actually bring up the tweet. It brings up the little viewer screen in the bottom, which does make it difficult to share. So it's always a little bit of a pain in the butt. But I think we can power through. I think we can handle it. I think we can power through the inconvenience. I can hit 3 buttons instead of 1, and there we go. Bada bing, bada boom. So thank you to everybody who shares our links and has found us, because it's not just the, you know, it's, they don't want you to find us anyway. And on that note, I did do the Protocols of the Elders of Zion segment yesterday. Did okay. I'm a little bit torn on whether I should continue doing it, because it's not the type of thing that you want to become known as the guy, the Protocols of Elders of Zion guy. Now, we're changing that. That's part of the old paradigm, the new paradigm developing. It won't be, you know, nearly, you know, won't be treated in the way that it always has been up till now. But I also lost a bunch of followers, and I'm wondering if that's not correlated somehow. But now I'm thinking, I'm sort of torn. I'm like, all right, was it not popular and people didn't really, you know, jive with it? So, you know, they didn't watch it. Or is it such dangerous information that the reach has been crushed? Because I'm not trying to brag here, but usually if I post a video, it does pretty well. Usually get, you know, pretty good amount of like the protocol videos, because I put out a bunch of them. They got like 100 likes. I'm like, Okay, is it not popular or is it being crushed? I don't know. I just don't know. But I think I will continue to cover it because I want to. Because I think it's interesting and I think you need to know it. And I think it provides the underpinning, the undergirding of so many of the stories that we're covering today, even if it's not a legitimate document, which I think it kind of is. It's obviously correct about some of its assumptions and some of its lessons it has about human nature. But anyway, well, we'll move on. We'll move on now. We do have a ton of stuff to cover today. And I think we will start with Henry Nowak. We, of course, played the video yesterday. We don't need to play it again today. It is just utterly horrifying. The image from the video, one of the screen grabs of one of the frames, can be added to some of the other iconic images that define the current political world. I'd put it up there with the fight, fight, fight picture of Donald Trump's assassination. And it's a picture of Henry Nowak's pale white hand that has been drained of blood as he's dying, and the hands of the police holding him down. And one of the police women has long acrylic fingernails, and they're inside her rubber blue glove. And so it gives it the appearance of claws. And there's something so disturbing about it, and yet seemingly, like, appropriate, that you really do get this unintentional image that looks like an angel's hand being surrounded by the hands of demons. And it's all these things, you know, combined together. You could not ask for, I don't even know how to phrase this, because it's not like a better is probably not the word that I'm thinking of. Yeah, there's the picture right there. And it's extremely symbolic, and it just sort of gives me a, visceral feeling. I mean, you can tell he's on the cusp of, if not already dead at this point. I mean, his hand is so white. This is not like color corrected. That is actually the color that his hand was at that point. And yet they're putting the handcuffs on his lifeless wrist. It's absolutely horrifying. And there's no ambiguity about this. People have been comparing this to George Floyd. This is so unlike George Floyd because this kid was innocent. This kid actually died because of the racism of the police, because of the training of the police, because the police were trained to be racist like this. This is everything they said about George Floyd, but it's actually real. George Floyd, of course, was a lifelong criminal. He died from a fentanyl overdose. The thing that was done to him was an aspect of training, but it wasn't a deadly, you know, chokehold. It was a knee on the back of his shoulder blades. But Henry Nowak was actually innocent. He was actually targeted because of his race. He was actually violently murdered through no fault of his own. And then the police and their racist training led directly to his death. And it's brutal and horrific. And he even uses the same words that George Floyd used, I can't breathe. Of course, with George Floyd, that's because the fentanyl was slowing the processes of his body down so much that his lungs couldn't sufficiently bring in air, which is how you die when you overdose on fentanyl. But for Henry Nowak, it was because he had been stabbed and was bleeding to death, and maybe a lung had been punctured. So again, I'm glad to see the UK standing up against this, coming out with these giant protests. My question is, how is this one going to be different? How is this one going to be any different than the Southampton riots after the mass stabbing there, than every Tommy Robinson protest? How is this going to be any different? Because guess what? The police are not taking a knee for Henry Nowak. They're bringing out the batons and the riot shields. When a career criminal overdoses on fentanyl in the U.S., the U.K. takes a knee and pledges support for the criminals. And actually, it was that act of submission to the violent rioters from Black Lives Matter that led directly to the death of Henry Nowak, because it was the changes in the policing strategy that indoctrinated police into thinking that claims of racism are to be, first of all, believed uncritically, and second of all, to be taken more seriously even than claims of murder. So I want to go to this video. This is from Zia Yusuf. Not sure who this guy is. I guess he's with Reform, which obviously is not as good as Restore in my personal opinion. But the really interesting part of this interview, it's on BBC Radio 4, and we probably won't be able to play the whole thing, but you hear the way in which the journalist asks him a question, and the instant he starts answering it, the journalist jumps in to cut him off. She doesn't want an answer. And he makes some good points about the disparity of care that is displayed by the UK authorities when it comes to, again, an American criminal overdosing on drugs in the hands of police versus a young 18-year-old British lad stabbed to death and then allowed to bleed out in the gutter because the police basically didn't take his claim seriously. Let's go to clip three here. This is Zia Yusuf at Zia Yusuf UK.
How do you respond to that comment from Stephen Roberts that what Nigel Farage has said is shameful and he's jumping to judgments? It's despicable.
Well, I'm absolutely stunned and disgusted by this entire segment. The BBC, you began this entire segment by saying that the police, quote, did not know that poor Henry had been stabbed. How can you say that when you have obviously watched the footage?
I didn't actually say that. I said they didn't know he was dying. Do you think they did know he was dying?
So given Henry had repeatedly said, I have been stabbed, to the degree the police did not know he was dying, it was because they actively chose not to know. And that is abundantly clear from watching the footage. And now to talk about how politicians like Nigel rightly raging and railing against all of this is somehow, making points that should not be made after a tragedy. I'm speaking on the BBC. After George Floyd, we heard nothing other than George Floyd segment after segment. You ran bite-sized specials indoctrinating children. You lost a £100 million diversity fund to structurally embed the discrimination against white people into your recruitment.
But hold on one second.
Mr. Yusuf, hold on one second. Recognizing this tragedy, because I'm afraid, is yet more of the anti-white racism that we have become used to from the BBC.
Mr. Yusuf, hold on. Let's take this slowly through what we know happened. The first thing we know is that there appears to have been mistaken policing. Now, let's pause it right there real quick, if we can,
because she's completely ignoring everything he just said. Everything he just said is absolutely true and obviously a very good point. That the BBC, for some reason, when Henry Nowak is murdered in cold blood, stabbed to death, and then the police basically go along with the murderer's lie about what occurred, allowing him to bleed to death without getting medical help. And the BBC's greatest concern is that people are talking about it too much. Why are people talking about this so much? Now, of course, you probably know what I'm going to say if you're a regular viewer of this, because I always use George Floyd as the example of the way in which the mainstream media can create storylines, can create trends that literally don't exist. They can fabricate them from thin air, make everybody think that it's an existential crisis, panicking out on the street, even if they're, again, think about the fact that they had people who were terrified to leave their home out on the street with 10,000 people protesting George Floyd. That's how important they thought it. That is the control over the human mind that these people enjoy. And so this guy, Zia Yusuf, is making a very obvious and important point, which is BBC is expressing the anti-white racism in this very segment as they question why people are so concerned about Henry Nowak and why they're, you know, treating it as this trend, because it is a trend, because he's just the latest in a line of people thousands and thousands and thousands of members long. The regular British people randomly stabbed to death by hostile foreigners who then get their crimes covered up by the mainstream media and the police themselves. She can't contend with any of that. She can't actually address any of those concerns. And so she wants to go, well, let's go back to what we actually know. Well, what we know is we have the
body cam footage, and we don't have all of it. And apparently, the minute that we have starts about an hour after the initial incident. So I'll give you more data here on the other side about it, but let's go back to the video. Again, Zia Youssef on UK radio. Let's watch.
Going to look at. Now, there is a second thing on top of that, which Reform UK is alleging, which is that is as a result of racism. And what it would be good to know is, on what are you basing that? How do you know that it wasn't just a terrible mistake by the police?
Well, how do we know? Well,
hold on, and I would pause it right there.
The call that was made.
This is the exact, that question exactly was never asked about George Floyd, was it? There was no, well, hold on, let's not jump to conclusions. There was no, well, do we even know that this was caused? And again, what you have here is you have, you know, a Sikh guy literally making like false flag attacking himself. He pulled his own turban so that he could then call the police and say, this kid attacked me and I defended myself. He called me racist. The whole thing is on the basis of race. Like, George Floyd had nothing to do with race until outsiders came in and made it about race. They didn't arrest George Floyd because he was black. They arrested him because he tried to spend a fake $20 bill. They didn't hold him down because he was black. They held him down because he demanded to get out of the car. They didn't choke him because he was black. He choked because he took too much fentanyl and his body processes slowed down to the point of death. Nothing about being black at all. This case, on the other hand, is absolutely about race from the very beginning. So why do these police get the benefit of the doubt? Why do we have to be really careful about jumping to conclusions here, where before, where there was no evidence whatsoever that there was any impact of race on the actual events that occurred, they would, you know, report it as if it was absolute fact, that this was a consequence of racist policing and police just were killing black people for fun, and this was just another example of it. We'll go back to this video. We're going to stick on this topic because I've got a lot of data to back up everything Youssef is saying and to discredit everything the BBC is trying to push forward. But just keep that in mind, that when it was George Floyd and Derek Chauvin, they never even asked this question. They never had this concern. This only applies when it's white people. Let's watch. Keep going.
By the murderer's brother, and that man claimed that poor Henry had been racist to him. Then when the police turned up, they arrested Henry as he was bleeding to death, and the last thing Henry heard on this earth were his rights being read to him having been arrested. And to answer your question directly as to how we know that structural racism, anti-white racism inside Hampshire Police is responsible, go and look at their website. The Hampshire Police boast about their, quote, race action plan that was created as a direct result. It literally cites George Floyd. Mm. And what it does is train police officers to react in the way that they did, because what it does is say you must treat accusations of racism demonstrably as a result of this, the accusation is taken more seriously than the accusation of murder. And I think any reasonable person watching this footage or listening to this program would agree with that.
Let's play you somebody who's obviously very close to this, Henry Novak's father.
So we'll come back on the other side and we'll talk about what his father said. So stay right there on the video and we'll go to a quick commercial break and come back to that. But you'll notice she, you know, interrupts him and doesn't let him finish his thought and then completely ignores it, doesn't contend with it, acts as if he didn't even said anything, and then tries to play Henry Nowak's dad. I'll tell you about him on the other side. Stay with us. When Barack Obama's birth certificate came out, and I went to the government website, I downloaded the birth certificate, I put it into Adobe Photoshop, I separated the layers, and I thought, this is crazy. They released a fake birth certificate. I didn't need somebody to tell me that. I didn't read somebody say that and just believe it on trust of them. I did it myself. I saw it with my own eyes. I did it with my own hands. And then I tell my friend, he's like, you know, that's racist, right? I'm like, what? No, I just did it. And they're like, you know, it's like a racist conspiracy theory, right? And you're like, what? What is going on? So if you've experienced that, the reason is some people do not have the chemical balance to handle things like that. You need a lot of testosterone to handle things like that. You need to have your mind not warped and distorted by the dopamine feedback loop that social media is designed to create in your brain to enforce you into the pre-established, preordained, approved of mindset. So If you're here, you probably already are winning the chemical war over your own body, but that's why we sell the supplements that we do. Pretty much everybody takes them. Who doesn't take vitamins? Who doesn't supplement in some way or another? Who doesn't add a protein scoop when they get a smoothie at the store or take vitamin D or vitamin C or fish oil, you know, before bed or, you know, when you wake up? Isn't a crazy thing. This isn't an out there woo-woo type of thing. Everybody takes supplements. Everybody I know takes supplements. And if you're not, you should be. And so all we do is get the best supplements on the market, white label them. And so you get them from us, you're probably getting a better price than at the store. And you're absolutely getting the best possible quality of all of these products. If you're here for the first time and don't know why you would support us, because you get the information for free, because the streams are free, because there's no obligation for you to support us, that's all part of the strategy. The fact is, we're able to keep this free because you go to thealexjonesstore.com. Put this information into action. You have to understand the attack on humanity itself and then fight back against it in two different ways. One, by advocating and trying to seize power politically to change things from the top down. But while that's going on, you've got to be protecting yourself against this stuff. And we have a lot of supplements and vitamins and minerals and merchandise for you to do exactly that. Things like Atomic Defense, Methylene Blue, Methylene Red. These things are extremely powerful and combat exactly the type of poisons that we talk about on a continual basis. So I'm not a medical doctor. I'm not making claims here. I'm not saying it's going to, you know, cure any diseases or anything. But I'm saying that in the modern world, it's microplastics and, you know, atrazine and herbicides and growth hormones and fluoride that they put in the water on purpose because they want you dumb. You have to combat these things. You have to be protecting yourself and building up your internal shield so you can even handle the information that we're bringing to you. And that really is a thing. Testosterone, the higher your testosterone is, the more likely you are to go against the grain, to reject the herd mentality of the crowd and instead pursue justice or pursue the truth, regardless of who says anything about it. And there's a chemical balance that has to be achieved there. But that's why there's such an attempt to lower your IQ, lower your testosterone, lower your masculinity, lower your self-sufficiency, lower your self-confidence. Because they want you a tired, weak, overwhelmed, overworked slave. That's what the people in power have designed this world to do to you. And you don't have to take it. You can fight back. You can protect yourself. You can reverse the effects of the damage that's done to your body, as it is to all of our bodies, by going to the Alex Jones store and getting a product. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. You can find us at alexjoneslive.com. Of course, on Rumble at rumble.com/thewarroomlive. It's rumble.com/thewarroomlive. You can follow us on X at AJNLive. Share those links, please, folks. And I'm very happy to welcome my guest, Brandon Straka. He, of course, is the founder of the Walk Away Campaign, a national movement encouraging open dialogue to pursue free thinking, the pursuit of truth, free from propaganda and political realignment through personal storytelling and civic engagement. Through live events, interviews, digital media, and grassroots organizing, he's built a platform reaching millions of people across the country. You can follow him on X at Brandon Straka. And on YouTube, he's the hashtag walk away, all one word, campaign. And of course, I had the privilege to participate in a three on three debate with some boomers. It was millennials versus boomers. We'll show you the trailer now. You can find this on YouTube, and we're going to talk to Brandon Straka about why he's doing this debate series and what we have to look forward to next. But go to YouTube, search Boomer Debate, and this will pop up. Let's watch the trailer. It's the Walk Away Millennial versus Boomer Debate. Let's watch.
Okay, Boomer, here we go again.
Okay, Boomer, you believe the official narrative of 9/11. It's like, okay, you believe the official moon landing. It's just like, oh my gosh, okay, Boomer, oh, we're sick of this same policy.
Which policy are you talking about that you're sick of?
Tonight, we're gonna tell the truth.
There is a deep and significant fracture inside the right, and it's getting worse.
We've tried it your way, and all it's done is cause the problem.
Ranting online is not going to solve the problem.
It's generational.
Judeo-Christian values, lessons of World War II.
Judeo-Christian values, just please toss that out of the ring. And as far as World War II is concerned, are we ever going to move on?
All of these issues that you're bitching about have been fought time and time and time again.
That type of response is what's driving people to the left.
Well, they came in illegally, but they're good people and they're working now on farms.
Trump betrayed his base, he betrayed his voters, and he did not follow through, and he was not conservative at all. And we thought Trump was going to be different.
So did we. And Trump was supposed to be the leader of America first.
You think Jeffrey Epstein killed himself?
Of course not.
Boomers for the win.
You are about to inherit a very messy world. And if you're not with us, it's not going to be recoverable.
Our foreign policy is controlled by a foreign country that blackmails and buys our politicians in order to do it.
Israel does not control our foreign policy.
Trump just said it.
He did not say that was the reason.
Do you think we're anti-Semites?
I'm getting a little bit of a feel.
The reason why we're frustrated with this war in Iran is because they lied about weapons of mass destruction after 2001.
It's not true.
This is where we're going to have a huge disconnect.
On this whole hate Muslims train that you can't even see what's happening right in front of your damn faces.
That is totally effing insane.
$5 trillion plus have been spilled in the Middle East because of it, and tens of thousands of American lives have died in the Middle East because of it, and our generation is saying we are done.
They've screwed up the Middle East, and now they're screwing up Europe.
Have you ever considered you might be falling for fake news?
Rubbish.
The great MAGA divide. MAGA boomers versus MAGA millennials came out a couple weeks ago, but still going strong. You can find it on YouTube. It's The Great MAGA Divide. Baby boomers versus millennials. You can search walk away or hashtag walk away campaign. And Brandon Straka. Brandon joins me today. How you doing, sir?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Tell us about why you wanted to do this debate series. I was very honored to participate in it. I was very impressed by the setup too. I mean, the studio was amazing. It was really, you put a lot of work into it, and I could tell, and you can tell from the finished product. You know, this is really well put together, and I imagine you're going to do more. Tell us about the debate series that Walkaway is putting on.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, Walkaway turned 8 years old a week ago. And for many, many years, the majority of our work and our messaging has been really just about leaving the Democratic Party. We're, you know, primarily a movement of former Democrats, former liberals who walked away from the left. And Walkaway has done a lot of events over the last 8 years, whether it's college campus tours or town halls, rallies, debates, mostly with a left versus right setup. But we were feeling, and I believe me, a lot of people in the kind of conservative influencer, conservative personality or even podcaster space knows that in the last 6 months, there's been this divide that's happened in the conservative movement, even longer than that. But really, it's, I think, intensified in the last 6 months. And people are having a really difficult time figuring out how to take a step forward. It seems like no matter what you say or what you do, you're alienating and agitating a significant portion of the base. And we were trying to figure out, like, how do we move forward? Because young people in this movement are feeling completely alienated right now by so much of what's happening from the Trump administration. And older people are feeling thrilled about everything that they think is happening or perceived to be happening based off of the news that they're consuming or the platforms that they're engaging on. And so it's like, we can't just go to college campuses like we've been doing and say what needs to be said that these kids actually want to engage about in here, because the older generation is going to be completely confused and upset. And by the way, the older generation is largely the people who are helping to fund and power Walkaway and support us, always has been. On the other hand, we can't just espouse the narratives that the older generation wants to hear or are believing, because we're going to alienate younger people. I mean, it's really messy. And so we've been kind of just like going back and forth and going like, what the hell are we going to do? And then I one day in the office said, what if we just address that? Like, what if we just focus on this divide, why the divide is happening, what the two, and it's not just generational, it's ideological, it's so many different things. And so we decided really that we felt like the best path forward was to address the divide that's taking place, try to bring people in who are representative of the different factions of this divide. And so the first one, this first debate is generational. It's baby boomers versus millennials. But we already have another one filmed in the can, ready to come out on June 10th. And that one is not generational. It's MAGA versus ex-MAGA. It's people who have walked. Everybody on that stage was at one time firmly behind Donald Trump and firmly behind the MAGA movement. But within the last calendar year, has walked away from Trump and MAGA. So it's going to be four against four. But that's the reason why we decided to do this series. And then we hope to do, we're going to do a lot more over this next year.
Yeah. And it was very fun participating in it, because often online, you're just talking past each other, or it's easy to sort of be rude or dismiss somebody. But when you're looking them right in the face, and I really liked the boomers, that we were debating. I mean, I really, you know, we talked a little bit beforehand, talked a little bit after the event, and, great respect for them. I wonder if that was any different than your other debates that you've held, or if there was a different kind of attitude, because to me, the most shocking thing about the walkaway debate was how aligned we were for the first like quarter of it. We seemed to not disagree on anything. I was kind of worried. I was going, well, this isn't even much of a debate. We just, you know, we have slightly different views, but we all basically agree. And then Israel got mentioned. Then the war in Iran came up, and it was like, I mean, they were just off. And from my perspective, they were also often la la land. I mean, they genuinely said that we found weapons of mass destruction, like, that we are looking for in Iraq. And it still blows my mind to this day. Why is it this topic, do you think? Why can we agree on everything, and then Israel and Iran comes up, and it's like we're on two different planets. We're like bitter enemies. It's crazy how this happens. What do you think is behind that?
Well, so I have my own opinion, which I'm about to share with you. But before I do, I'll say like that what the question you just asked needs to continue to be explored over and over and over again. And we're going to keep doing it with Walk Away. We're not going to walk away. We're not going to walk away from the hard conversations that need to happen within our movement. But the best I've been able to figure out at this point, because we shot that debate, and I don't want to speak too much out of turn here, but suffice it to say, some of the panelists involved in that debate, the one that you were in, were upset after it was over, and kind of expressed to me some of their feelings about what they perceived to be their experience at the debate. And it largely revolved around the millennials being incredibly disrespectful and hateful and just plain wrong. They were just wrong. And so I didn't want to have a confrontation with a panelist. So I ended up calling my mother, because who better to have a confrontation with? So I called my boomer mother, and I started explaining to her what this panelist was saying to me. And my mother is very much in alignment with the boomer panelists. And so I started saying, you know, why does your generation feel this way about Israel? And this is my mother, who, lives in a tiny little Catholic town in Nebraska and does not travel very much. I would be shocked if my mother has ever met five Jewish people in her entire life.
Right.
And I swear to God, Harrison, if she had to choose between throwing me in front of a moving bus and saving Israel, it's not even a question, like, what she would do. She becomes emotional when she talks about Israel. She becomes angry when she talks about Israel. And so I started asking her about it, and she told me that somebody of a devout Catholic faith, as she is, she considers Israel to be central to her own faith and her own experience. She considers it to be the Holy Land, and she considers the Jews to be God's chosen people. And so I think any criticism of Israel, she considers to be a very personal, I won't say attack, but a personal commentary on her faith.
Right.
And that context started to make a little bit of sense for me. But I said to her, well, if that's how you feel, how are we ever supposed to have an honest conversation about the government of Israel? And, you know, God forbid, if they have corrupt leadership or behaving in a corrupt way, how can we ever have that conversation? You know, I grew up Catholic, as I just said, and we were taught, that the Pope is infallible, that when somebody becomes the Pope, they are literally a perfect person walking on. Well, then how are we know that the Pope has been, many popes in the past have been involved in a lot of corruption in the Catholic Church. How do we have these conversations openly if you're deciding that there are human beings on this planet that have an elevated status above other human beings, therefore are not allowed to be criticized or touched? Well, hey, I think it's a really dangerous formula.
And look, I appreciate what you're saying. Like, I totally get the parallel that you're drawing, but I would just say it's different than that because the Pope at least achieved something, right? He was voted on by the College of Cardinals. He has in some way shown himself, you know, to be worthy, according to the Cardinals, of achieving that seat. When it comes to Israel and the Jews, it's their birthright. It's just because they are who they are. I mean, so I think it's even more ridiculous than even you're laying it out, which is appropriately ridiculous, as you point out. But no, it's like, because they're birthright, we just can't criticize them and they're always right all the time. It's baffling. And to me, the really baffling thing was I could talk to the boomers and say, I agree with what you're saying. They're very concerned about the takeover of Muslims. So am I. I don't like what's happening to Europe. I don't like what's happening here. Even if it is a much smaller, you know, threat here, I still don't like it. I still don't have to put up with it. So I agree with them on that. But I was going, but this is counterproductive to that. Do you not see how, you know, destroying Libya led to the takeover of Europe by Muslims? Like, and there was some sort of disconnect there. And that to me is even harder to get over because I can understand, at least intellectually, you think these people have, you know, it does make sense that when you talk about Israel, they react as if you're questioning their religion. That makes sense to me. But then it's like, logically, if this is your goal, and I'm pointing out that the path you're taking is not leading to the goal, why are you still getting so, you know, angry at me? There's stuff like that, that how do we bridge this gap? I guess that's what the debate's all about, right? How do we bridge this gap? Nobody knows.
Right. Well, it's bothersome though, because it's, you know, it's not their religion. I mean, it's not my mother's religion. It was not the religion of any of the panelists, not directly. And, you know, what you just said, I think is interesting because, there was a lot going on. And, you know, Owen, Schroyer, of course, was on there with us, and Owen is, difficult to contain, you know, and did a great job. But I wish, actually hearing you say that, I wish, I would have heard more from you on the conversation about Islam and Muslimism, because I remember sitting there in the middle as the moderator and feeling very surprised hearing, Owen represent what came across to me as, generally speaking, perhaps the millennial position on, feeling like there was almost an exaggeration about the threat of Islam.
Right.
Which I did not realize. I mean, if in fact that is sort of a millennial position, I was surprised to hear it. And so it was very fascinating for me because sitting in the middle, I learned a lot from both sides. I honestly did. I also think that, you know, I want to do one of the next debates I want to do is a conspiracy theory debate. Because I heard your side talking a lot about, you know, 9/11, the moon landing, JFK assassination, things like that. And I thought I didn't want the conversation to veer off so much that we couldn't get back on track. So I didn't really indulge in it. But I was like, God, I really want to do a whole debate about these conspiracy theories that these guys think and get a better understanding of how they feel about it. But I wish I would have heard more from you on the Islam issue, because it almost felt like Owen was saying, you guys got to get over this whole Islam thing. We have a much bigger threat right in front of us right now that you're not seeing. And that's what I took to be kind of the general millennial position.
Yeah, well, but that sort of goes to the heart of why we have this MAGA divide in the first place, right? Because there is this sort of reactionary, you know, habit people have where it's like they might hate Muslims, then they look into Israel and go, wait, Israel's not great, so I guess Muslims are great. And it's like this, like, well, not everything has to be a dichotomy. It doesn't have to be if they're good, then they're bad. Now they're good, so they're bad. It's like, you know, I always use the phrase, you know, nobody says Rock is pro paper just because, you know, he fights scissors, right? It's like you can have two enemies and they can have two enemies, or you can all be friends. Like,
sure.
It's that, but do you understand what I'm saying? That like the MAGA divide, yeah. It feels like there's this feedback where everything has to go to the extreme, and you can't say, well, I love the people of Israel, but I don't really love what their government's doing. It has to be, no, they all deserve to die. And it's totally unhelpful. But that really is what's happening to MAGA right now, right? So there's this feedback loop. And we start to disagree, and then it's like the thread gets pulled and it all just is starting to unravel. So how do we stop that feedback loop from occurring?
Well, okay. Before we talk about how we can fix it, can we just talk about it for a second? Because
yeah.
This is actually a really big deal to me, like a really big deal. When I walked away from the left like 8 years ago and started Walk Away, one of the primary reasons was the left's identity politics, what became this suffocating culture of not being able to ask questions or talk about things without being labeled a racist or a bigot or people attacking your character, trying to cancel you. And when I finally turned the light on in my own brain about like, oh, this is really my side doing this. And there seems to be a lot of like freedom and opportunity over on the right, this MAGA movement, you know, they've convinced me Donald Trump is like the second coming of Hitler. But like the more I looked into it, I was actually like, God, it feels like there's freedom over there. And when I came over to the right, I felt like I could breathe.
Right.
And I felt like there was actually like a true diversity that I enjoyed and a diversity of thought and the ability to agree to disagree and that we could do it without being disagreeable. We could be civil with each other. We could have different ideas. That was the MAGA that I joined back in 2018 and that I loved for years. And I'm telling you that I am seeing right now not only the exact same identical behavior in the MAGA movement that caused me to walk away from the left, I would argue in many ways it's much, much worse.
Right.
Because at least the left doesn't have the arrogance to basically say that we're not the left. The right believes it's better than the left. The right believes that they're incapable of engaging in these behaviors and that these are actual leftist behaviors. Meanwhile, they're engaging right now in the exact same behaviors. I have spent the last 8 years on the right doing events for all different kinds of minority communities, including the Jewish community. Just a week ago, I went and participated at a rally in New York City where I spoke out against Mom Donnie. And largely there were a lot of Jewish people there. It was put together and hosted by different Jewish coalitions. I was happy to participate in it, but I am getting called every single day an anti-Semite, a Jew hater, and people are actually calling me a Nazi and using the word Nazi. And I'm going, how do you write down that I'm a Nazi and not realize that you're using the exact same words that we made fun of the left for so many years of using because they're so deranged, hyperbolically deranged, and you're acting exactly the same way. I had a woman yesterday swearing at me on X and telling me that I was responsible for the death of Jews because I repeated the news story that broke yesterday about Trump, what he allegedly said on the phone with Netanyahu, which as far as I can see over the last 24 hours seems to be getting picked up more and more and more. So seems to be more substantiated as far as I can see. And it'll be really interesting to see if the story is completely true. Does that mean that MAGA now is going to be required to feel the same way that Trump feels about Netanyahu? They're going to have to walk. Okay. No. Oh, well, that'll be interesting, won't it?
That's what's so funny. We were talking about this yesterday on the show. We had my co-host on Moonbase Live, Lebanon John, was talking about this and we were joking. And then afterwards, you know, retweeting people who were going, well, you know, wait, I don't think this is good what Trump's doing. We're just throwing their own words back at him going, oh, are you a panickin? Sorry, you got to be on board now. We, you know, Trump loves Hezbollah. You know, that's what you got to do now, too. And it's like, you know, it's totally inconsistent. And look, they're doing it for the exact same reason the left did it. It's because if you don't have an argument, you call the other person a bad name. It's not that complicated. It's not that sophisticated. You call them a bad name. You claim that all of their outrage is insincere so you don't have to, you know, actually argue it. They're a Nazi and you move on. It is the exact strategy of the left, but here's where it gets really crazy. The people doing that and calling you a Nazi then call you the woke right when in reality, they're the ones doing the woke thing. They're the ones, you know, with this identity politics, demanding that you, believe the same thing as them or you'll be canceled. They're the woke ones. So it's like, it really does make me feel insane that they're calling us the woke right while trying to cancel us for being Nazis. And we're like, we just don't like being subservient to a foreign nation. It's completely insane.
It's brain shattering stuff. Yeah. And, I can't honestly say that I was in the first wave of people this time around to get what was going on. I was definitely in one of the first waves of people to get what was happening with the left. And the reason why walk away hit so much the way it did is because I was kind of on the tip of the spear, leaving the left and, telling people what was going on and encouraging other people to leave the left. Now that the exact same thing is happening right now on the right, I remember when the, you know, influencers were using the term woke right. And the one little thing I'll give myself credit for, even though I was absolutely not on the cutting edge of understanding what was going on I'm getting it now, but, I was not in the first wave. Is I kept saying for so many times, I kept being like, I don't get this term woke right, because I saw the people using it and I saw the way they were using it. And I was like, I don't get it. Someone explain it to me. It doesn't make sense. Like, right. It doesn't make sense. Now I get why it didn't make sense, because it literally doesn't make sense.
That's
it's
so
like
funny.
They're inverting the truth.
Yeah. And it's like, you're not a biased person. You're not like coming at it from one angle or another. It's just you're looking at it and going, wait, what? No, this doesn't make any sense
right.
though. It's, and that's like all you really need to have. That's the little chink in the armor that you really start exploring, and you go, well, what is actually motivating these guys? Like I said, participating in the debate was so much fun. I'm honestly shocked to hear that, you know, one of the other panelists felt disrespected. I'm going to blame Owen for that, because I was very respectful. Thank you very much. No, I'm kidding. But I am surprised at that, because I thought it was a very, I mean, it got a little contentious. There was a little bit of yelling. I understand that. But at the end of the day, I thought it was very respectful, which is unique in debates these days. And I don't know if there was a clear, you know, knock it out of the park winner. I think we won at the end of the day. Obviously, I'm going to be biased, but I felt like it was a very fair and interesting conversation with boomers expressing things that I do not hear from anybody else. So again, I just encourage everybody to go watch the debate that I participated in along with Alex Stein and Owen Schroyer. You can find it on YouTube, the Walk Away Campaign, search Walk Away Debate. You can search the Great MAGA Divide, Baby Boomers versus Millennials. It's a Walk Away Campaign, and Brandon Straka are the two channels that are hosting it. And of course, you can follow Brandon on X at Brandon Straka. But what is up next for the debate series? Are you doing more? When's the next one coming out? Tell us how people can support and find your movement.
Thank you so much. Yeah, so the next one is going to be June 10th, which I believe is a Wednesday. We're going to try to keep putting these out. No, not every single Wednesday, because we're going to have to start filming more of them and kind of, you know, bank the content. But this will be kind of like a walk away Wednesday kind of thing. So the next one is Wednesday, June 10th. And that one is MAGA versus ex-MAGA. As I said, people who were firmly behind Trump, half of them have walked away from Trump and walked away from MAGA. The other half are still firmly behind him. And we've got like great heavy hitters on that one too. We have Clint Russell, Owen Schroyer, Emily Wilson, and Josie the Redheaded Libertarian on the ex-MAGA side. On the current MAGA side, we have Gavin McGinnis, A.L. Jacoby, Linda Catalina, and David Pollack. And so it really, really great, team. And look, if you think the millennial boomer one was explosive, this one's honestly 10 times more explosive, to the point where I actually had to get out of my chair at one point to stop a girl fight from happening on the stage.
Why would you do that, Brandon? Why would you stop a girl? Don't you know what gets clicks? You should know this by now.
I know, but walk away. We don't have enough money yet to buy insurance. So
that's
as
okay.
Soon as we can buy insurance,
that's fair.
Then I'll stay in my chair. But no, honestly, to that point, let me say too, please,
hold on. Can you stay with us for five more minutes? Can we do five more minutes with you?
Yeah, you bet.
All right, let's do that. We'll be right back.
These new data centers will oversee everyone in the galaxy. I will be in full control.
Power levels are stable. Proceed with the install. Copy that. Installing the module now. Connection confirmed. All green. Cable secured. Power to the cluster. Initiating boot sequence. Component locked. Running diagnostics. Archive systems online. Report to command. Construction team, report status. Power grid stable. TK-421. Cabling complete. No faults. Proceed to phase two for the Empire.
Things are going according to plan. The Emperor will be happy. The Empire demands perfection.
Status report. Any anomalies?
Diagnostics are clear, sir.
Proceed with the calibration. Watch for fluctuations.
I find your desire for privacy insignificant. The Empire's new data network will observe every corner of the galaxy, every signal, every act of disloyalty.
A disturbance in the Force there is. Feel it, you can.
Those who obey have nothing to fear. Those who resist will be terminated.
receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Brandon Straka is my guest. Follow him on X at Brandon Straka. Find the debate that myself, Owen Schroyer, and Alex Stein participated in on YouTube, the Walk Away campaign. And you can search MAGA, the Great MAGA Divide, Baby Boomers versus Millennials. And I got to admit, I may have been wrong. I was pitching this in the last segment saying, if you want to see a really good conversation, I'm not sure there was a clear and away winner. Well, I just scrolled through the comments on YouTube. Turns out there was a clear and away winner. Turns out we won. Turns out the Millennials blew the Boomers out of the water, according to people on YouTube. So maybe we did do better than I expected. And yeah, people really enjoyed. I like, well, I don't need to read some of these, comments, but we got cut off there at the very end. I wanted you to let you finish your thought and tell everybody what's coming up next and how they can support Walk Away.
Yeah. Thank you. So yeah, basically what I was going to say was, you know, look, we're kind of putting ourselves out there by creating this content and going down this road. And I'm a big believer in that, you know, the truth matters. And you can't really deal with the problems in any movement unless you can truthfully identify what the problems are and bring them to the table and try to handle it. And as I said earlier, a lot of the support that I've had for 8 years to drive Walk Away forward has been people in the older generation. A lot of my larger donors are very adherent to Israel. And that's fine. I have a total respect for that. But my point is, we're kind of going out on a limb here and we are losing support by doing it. So if there are people out there who think that this message is necessary and think that these types of conversations are necessary, please go to our YouTube channel, subscribe, you know, share our content, follow it. Because the sad news is we're going to continue to lose a lot of followers and a lot of support by creating the content, but I'm willing to do it because I think the content is really important and necessary. And if anybody wants to help support what we're doing, they can go to walkawaycampaign.com, make a donation to the cause so we can continue to produce these, debates, these conversations. That help would be tremendous. And I would ask for the same thing on my X account too, at Brandon Straka. I mean, I'm losing like thousands of followers a day, because I'm being outspoken, about things that, you know, a lot of people who are just staunchly behind Trump, no matter what, don't want to hear this stuff. But I know that there's a huge appetite for people who are seeing the truth about what's going on. And I'd love it if you'd follow me and help support the work we're doing.
Absolutely. And I can just say from working with you behind the scenes, I can just tell you're motivated by the truth. I mean, you can tell sometimes behind the scenes, all right, you know, this guy over here is doing stuff because he thinks it's going to be popular. This guy over here is doing it because he thinks he can get money. When I work with you, I can tell you're motivated by the truth and you're genuinely concerned about our inability to find the truth right now. And we're trying to solve that problem. And I'm not surprised that you're losing support because that's just the world that we are in. It's sad, but true. But I am a little surprised because this was a debate. I mean, you didn't rig it. You didn't give us the questions beforehand. The boomers you chose, I thought were very good, very respectable,
very good.
You know, so, you know, if they're upset at this, it's because their debate lost. It's because they lost the argument. You know, that's not your fault. Like they need a better position, I guess.
Well, the sad truth is that a lot of the people who are unfollowing me right now or expressing their anger about it didn't even watch it. Didn't even watch it. So people are mad because I would create any content that could be construed as critical of Trump or the Trump administration. And basically their argument is, you know, we're going into the midterms and he's doing the best he can and he just needs our support right now. So why would you do this? You're only making things worse, which obviously is not true at all. But it's, you know, it's just kind of sad because I think, if people actually took the time to watch it, I mean, if you read the comments, you'll actually see a lot of people in the baby boomer generation who are saying like, wow, this is super eye opening. I'm glad I watched this. This is really important. A lot of people are saying it's the best content Walkaway's ever created.
Yep.
And I agree. Actually, I think it's, really, really necessary. And I think it's very well done, if I may say so. And, absolutely. So yeah, it's disappointing, but it's where we are.
Well, hey, you're gonna get pushback, for telling the truth. And unfortunately, if they'd had these conversations beforehand, Trump would be swept into a, you know, midterm success. It's because we haven't had this conversation that he's in trouble at all. Brandon Straka, incredible stuff. Walk away.
It's happening now. It will decide the fate of humanity. The time has come to choose sides. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance. Share the links now at alexjoneslive.com.
Alex Jones is back. The info war continues at alexjoneslive.com. And you can follow us on X at Real Alex Jones and on Rumble at The Alex Jones Show Live. Plus, you can download the app, alexjonesapp.com. So check it out now and let the deep state globalists know we will never be silenced.
Welcome back, folks. So before we did our interview with Brandon Straka, we were talking about the consequence, the backlash, the outrage over the murder of Henry Nowak in the UK. And we're going to go back to that because as we've been speaking, the protest in the UK has become violent and the police are now attacking the protesters. And so we'll show you those videos and give you an update as to what exactly is going on. And again, I ask, how is this going to be any different? What is the outcome of this going to be that's going to improve the lives of the British? Because outside of that, then, you know, what is protesting other than just a pressure release valve if it doesn't actually achieve the change that it's seeking? So we'll get into exactly what's going on there. We've got, of course, a lot of domestic news to continue to cover and the war in Iran. But, you know, right there, Brandon Straka was talking about the struggles that he's had trying to truthfully assess what's going on politically these days to try to retain and hold on to the thing that made the MAGA movement so appealing in the first place, the type of organization, the type of movement, the type of values and principles that would draw people from the left away from the left by waking them up to the reality of the positions that they support. And you would think this would actually be happening more right now because you see more and more people on the left being censored. Cenk Uygur just got denied access to the UK. And he's very angry about this, of course. But I would point out that whether it's Sassan Piker or Cenk Uygur or anybody else on the left, they were cheering for the exact same policies that are now facing them. And at the time, that's what we said. That was our argument. We were saying, you think censorship's great because you're the ones in charge. You can't set this precedent. Well, they thought we were idiots, set the precedent, and now they're paying the price for it. And I'm sort of surprised that they're not, well, I'm not actually that surprised because who they are. When you're on the left, you tend not to have this type of retrospection. But if it was me, I would be looking around and going, gee, maybe they were right about the whole we got to preserve free speech thing. Maybe when they were saying it's free speech and I was saying it's offensive and it shouldn't be free speech, maybe now I understand why they were right the whole time. Now, I don't know if they're actually going through that process. It'd be nice if they were. But it's strange. It's strange how people interpret sort of whatever they want from whatever they hear you say. Like I've been very frustrated at Trump. I've been very outspoken and in some cases outraged, but in for the most part, just bemused, just sort of sad about what has happened to the Trump movement. But at the same time, anytime he does something good, I'll celebrate him. And every time I've talked about him, and again, this isn't like a strategic thing. I'm not going, oh, I'm going to criticize Trump, but I better pat it in some, you know, compliments. So, you know, I don't drive away the Trump supporters. I'm just going to say what I think. I'm going to say what I think is true. And I hope at the end of the day that even if you disagree with me, you're at least the type of person that appreciates the sincerity that I'm trying to bring to you and the honesty that I approach all this stuff with, because if Trump was doing well, I wish he had been the person that we thought he was. I wish he had maintained campaign Trump through his administration, and I'd continue to be his biggest cheerleader. And I still to this day want him to succeed. I don't want to see his family imprisoned by the radical Democrats. I don't want to see, you know, I don't want to see any of that crap. And yet I have people online going, well, now that you're a radical anti-Trumper, and it's like, all right, people just hear whatever they want to hear. All I can do is tell the truth and trust that you can give me the benefit of the doubt, especially if you've been watching me for a long enough time that I do 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, extemporaneous, no teleprompters, nobody telling me what to say. I would think you'd be able to, you know, I'd be able to get across to you that I'm just have very sincere concerns about the state of this country, concerns that have to be addressed. They're existential. And when something's existential like that, whether it makes Trump happy or not is not, doesn't even enter into the conversation as far as I'm concerned. And I do love and appreciate that our audience can come along with us on this journey and can, even if you, you know, love Trump and think we're off the mark here, again, I hope that you at least respect that we are approaching it from a truthful, honest, and sincere position. And we're motivated at the end of the day, as we always have been, by liberty, by the concept of liberty. Even as that has fallen out of vogue, even as, you know, libertarian, you know, doesn't quite have the same meaning that it may have had 15 years ago. It's not quite as respected as maybe it was when Ron Paul was the face of it. And yet, I'm still a libertarian, you know, fundamentally. I still think liberty is the ultimate value, and that's what we have to pursue. And that's our ultimate guiding light. And if you agree with that and, you know, want to join us on this journey, I don't care what you think about Trump. I don't care what race you are. I don't care what God you pray to. As long as you agree that I have the right to my God and I have the right to speak my mind and I have the right to oppose my government, then we can mutually benefit in that arrangement. And we're on the same team. So we've also, you know, had trouble with this, but it's not actually that hard, because the other thing is, it's like our whole thing is being sincere. Our whole thing is being uncontrolled. Our whole vibe is saying what's true, even if it destroys us. It's just like, that's who we are, and we kind of can't help it, but we wouldn't want to help it anyway. And so it's like, okay, if we were to go, oh, gee, opposing Trump sure is unpopular, we better keep supporting Trump because it's popular, it's like we might as well not exist at that point. At that point, nothing we say has any credibility anymore. So we're never going to make a decision like that. We're never going to cover something because it's popular. We're never going to not cover something because it's unpopular. We're going to cover the most unpopular topics ever. We're going to take stances that are true regardless of who anybody feels about it. And we think this is a valuable service, and we think this is a good thing to have a powerful, big, important media outlet that refuses to be silent, even if their own side says it. So I hope you can support us in this mission. We cannot do it without you. We do rely on you. We do not take your support for granted. And right now is a fantastic time to go to thealexjonesstore.com, not only because you're getting massive discounts on some of our best-selling products like Methylene Red, Atomic Defense, Methylene Blue Tincture, Methylene Blue Gummies, MK Ultra, War Cry Smelling Salts, and so much more. All of those are 40% off, 35% off. Zeolite tincture, creatine powder, CMOS capsules, meth blue caps, and 30% off the iodine tincture, the CMOS gummies, the Shilajit caps and gummies, and Ultimate Chill and Ultimate Energy. All of those, 30% off. But best of all, this week only, you get 2x the entries to win one of 2 incredible cars, or both, a custom H1 Hummer and a 2026 Dodge Charger souped up to the maximum degree, plus $20,000 in cash. For every $1 you spend, you get 100x the entries to win either or both of these cars. Somebody's got to win it. Might as well be you. You just got to go to thealexjonesstore.com. Thealexjonesstore.com. This week only, you're getting 2x the entries than you normally do, which means you're getting 100x entries for every dollar you spend. So most of the people that win these cars win in this double week. Once a month, there's a week where both sweepstakes overlap for 1 week. And almost every time we've given away a car, it's somebody who bought it during this week, this crossover week. So now's the time. Not only, it's like talk about a 360 win. Talk about a 1080 win. You support free speech. You basically spit in the face of the globalists that thought they'd destroyed us 10 years ago and are wondering why we won't stop moving. You get a fantastic product that's going to improve your life and help you in a lot of ways. And you might just walk away with an H1 Hummer. Yeah, like it's like win, 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 win. It's win on top of win. There's no downside. Go now, thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you. And with that, let's return to the utterly heartbreaking, horrifying, and deeply typical story of Henry Nowak. Young man, 18, on his way back home from a night out at 11 p.m., and he is set upon by a knifeman, stabs him in the back, stabs him in the legs, and leaves him bleeding to death when the police show up, mock him, disregard what Henry Nowak said, and handcuff him as he bleeds to death, desperately trying to tell them, I've been stabbed, I can't breathe. Again, beyond horrifying and beyond reason to rise up against your government, like actually rise up against it. Like this is the culmination of so many horrifying trajectories, trends, events that have occurred over the last several years that ironically, I don't know if ironic is the right word, but ironically enough, so much of this got kicked off by the death in the hands of police of George Floyd. The comparisons, of course, as I made earlier, I mean, these two events are utterly different in every possible way in that the person who died actually was innocent, was actually killed because of the racist positions of the police that they were actually trained in, and actually is the symptom of a deeply and ubiquitously racist power structure that deliberately and explicitly disadvantages certain people because of their immutable characteristics, their skin color, their race, their status of birth, things they have no control over. Now, strangely, and again, it would honestly be funny if it weren't, you know, didn't have such devastating and horrifying and deadly consequences. But like, I did not realize that they allowed people to carry knives in the UK. How many times over the last 10 years have you heard the most outrageous headlines about knife crime in the UK? Sadiq Khan saying knife crime is part and parcel with city living. Knife bins where they ask people to throw their knives away as if that's solving a problem, as if it's people going, God, I wish I could just get rid of this giant knife. Wherever will I put it? Okay, it's like totally absurd. Knife bins. Bin your knife there, mate. It's like, what the hell is wrong with you people? You can't have butter knives. I've seen posts where it's like you have to show your ID to literally buy cutlery, buy spoons and forks in this country. So just think about the years upon year upon year of these ridiculous headlines of this nation just desperately trying to figure out how to stop knife crime. Meanwhile, every minority has their own personal exclusion where they can carry 10-inch long, you know, punching daggers if they feel like it. It is so crazy. It's so crazy. Ethnic daggers of Britain's major ethnic groups. Now, I don't think all these are actually legal to carry, but certainly the Sikh kirpan is one of those where they're just allowed to carry it around. There's allowed to get, which I imagine, I mean, are Japanese people allowed to carry samurai swords, do you think? I wonder. How long does this tradition have to go back? Is it even real? Like, what the hell? What are you talking about? I'm telling you, it's like, they're like, no knives. So like, we're going to have knife bins. You can't have butter knives. You can't, I mean, we are cracking down on the knives. It's like, well, what about that guy? And it's just a guy covered in giant knives. And they're like, oh, he's fine. Don't worry about him. What? What? What is wrong with you people? Genuinely, what is wrong with you people? And really, what needs to happen is the British need to start carrying around knives. And there's been some discussion about this. The Anglo-Saxon Seax, S-E-A-X, Seax, type of knife. It was carried around by the Vikings, essentially. It was Like a Bowie knife, like the traditional Bowie knife. Can I carry a Bowie knife since I'm from Texas? If I go to the UK, can I carry around a 12-inch Bowie knife with a, you know, finger guard for fighting? I am Texan after all. It is my religion. It is my prerogative. It is my ancestral right to carry around a Bowie knife. But they don't care. But obviously not. But did you know the name Saxon? Do you know what the name Saxon means? Do you know where it comes from? It comes from the word sea axe. It literally means knife. The name Saxon, as in Anglo-Saxon, means a warrior who carries a sea axe. I think they have a pretty good, I think they have a pretty good case for saying, you know, they have an ancestral right to a traditional knife, a traditional blade in the exact same way that the Sikh are allowed to carry one. If you're Anglo-Saxon, your name literally means warrior who carries a knife. How far Britain has fallen. The place named after a knife now only allows psychotic foreigners to carry around giant knives. And of course, the question has become, what do you do about it? Do you get rid of the religious, you know, exclusions? That's not a knife. This is a knife. Do Australians even have knives anymore? We haven't even checked in on Australia about this. Only Jewish people can hold knives in Australia. Only Jewish people going to or from a bris are allowed to carry a knife in Australia. Nobody else. I didn't see that. I didn't see the bris knife on the ethnic dagger. Oh, they use their teeth. Never mind. They use their teeth. So the question is, do you let them keep their knives or do you not? I think, for the sake of general sanity, if you are as paranoid about knives as the UK government has been over the last several decades, go ahead and get rid of all the knives. If you're going to charge people for having butter knives outside of their home, go ahead and have that apply to the foreigners as well. I think that's reasonable. It's like some of the things we have to talk about on this show. It's so utterly nuts. Other people are saying, let the Sikhs keep their knives. Let the natives arm themselves as well. People are either equal under the law or they aren't. Spoiler alert, they aren't, as evidenced well by this. There you go. There's a Scottish girl holding her traditional sea axe and hatchet. Actually, it is kind of a sea axe shape there. But the UK Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, has said there's going to be no rollback of the right to carry ceremonial knives. Because, you know, they'll undo literally every part of UK society. They will upend 2,000 years of tradition on a whim. I mean, hell, they just got rid of the House of Lords. They're getting rid of jury trials. They are abandoning every aspect of their culture as rapidly as they can, without a second thought, without a debate, and without, you know, the ability for the regular people to have a say on it. And then there's a example like this where it's like, hey, we have this weird cutout where you're allowed to carry a knife if you're a Sikh. And they're just like, we cannot change. We can never change that. That is an ancient tradition of ours that, you know, we refuse to give up. The House of Lords. Yeah, forget that. The Magna Carta. Who cares? But never will we ever bend to the demand that Indian people can't carry giant murder blades around. Here's the actual ceremonial blade. What type of ceremonies, you're asking? I think we saw one. I think we saw one, and it ended with Henry Nowak dying. This is the 8-inch ceremonial blade used to murder Henry Nowak. British people aren't allowed to carry weapons or any means of self-defense. Meanwhile, certain groups are allowed to walk around with these. Absurd. Yeah, but also perfectly in line with everything else that we've seen. Women in the UK get arrested for pepper spray. Grown men are allowed to carry around 8-inch long knives, wearing them openly, but a young woman in the rape capital of Europe can't carry around pepper spray to defend herself. Now, we closed out on that BBC radio interview, but I think we can move on. But what she was about to show, if we have a cue where we ended, let's go ahead and pick that up again, because what she is about to talk about is Henry Nowak's father. Now, Henry Nowak's father did give a press conference And he said a lot of things. What she plays is one part. I'll tell you what else he says. And then we'll talk about what may have motivated him to say the thing that she's about to play him saying on BBC Radio 4. So again, the person she's interviewing, you know, just talked about, you know, made all of these great points about the inconsistency of the British media when it comes to asking questions about the motivation of race, when it comes to police killings, comparing it to George Floyd, talking about how the racism deliberately instilled in the UK policing system led directly to Henry Novak's death. She ignores all of these points and basically tries to shame him by playing Henry Novak's father, basically saying, don't politicize this, in a statement that is almost word for word, exactly what we've heard a million other times. So I'll tell you what I think is behind this. Here's this BBC woman trying to shut everybody up for coming to any political conclusions about the stabbing that occurred against Henry Nowak. Let's watch.
The program would agree with that.
Let's play you somebody who's obviously very close to this, Henry Novak's father, Mark. This is what he said outside court yesterday.
We do not want his death to be used to create further division, hatred or tension. We want his story to make our streets safer for everyone.
He also went on.
As the KC for the prosecution summed up in court, this is not a case about Sikhism. This is not a case about racism. This is a case about murder.
See, it's Henry's father saying this is not a case about racism.
Well, my heart goes out to him and to the whole family. And I could not agree more that what we need is equality before the law. And what this is about, evidently, and again, this isn't just my view. I think the level of anger, quite rightly, in this country is significant as people watch this footage. And I put it to you again. I mean, even just hearing the last exchange that you just had there where, you know, he insulted Nigel Farage. Look, the reality is that when the police turned up, Henry said repeatedly that he had been stabbed and said, I cannot breathe. And yet the police went on to arrest him. What that means is the accusation from an ethnic minority about racism was taken as read with no burden of proof. Whereas the accusation of this person has stabbed me from a white man was suddenly there was a burden of proof for that.
What do you think needs to happen?
Entire discussion, and that is the exact point that we are making.
It is
a direct result of the way police are trained.
What do you think needs to happen?
I've seen many serving police officers, and they tell me all the time.
She's trying to interrupt, and we can go ahead and take it down now. But look, it does. To be honest with you, first of all, it doesn't really matter what the father says. He is not the arbiter of reality, right? Obviously, this had to do with race. Obviously, the Sikh man was motivated by race. Why did he stab this kid? We haven't even heard, like, a suggestion about that. Why did he stab the kid? Why did he claim the kid, Henry Nowak, called him a racist name? Because they know how useful it is. Why did the officers behave the way they did? Because they thought it was a racial crime that they were contending with. So, you know, it's like this, you know, okay, fine. The dad said that. He's wrong. I get that he probably has just had his world destroyed, and in this incredibly vulnerable emotional moment, he almost certainly has members of the UK government coming to him and giving him a script to read, because that's what they do. And this was one of the things that Trump actually got rid of here, but we used to have it here in America, which is why you had people like Carmelo Anthony's father say exactly the same thing. Or any of these people say exactly the same thing. It's why it's sort of shocking whenever you see somebody, a father of a child murdered in a, you know, racial attack against white people, like the father who presented to Congress and, you know, was outraged and said, you know, this is awful and I hope nobody goes through this. And this is a consequence of the anti-white racism. And it's like so rare to see that, because there are offices that go and train the people as to what to say, in the exact same way that they trained George Floyd's family to go out and stoke the fires. They train the family of victims to try to put those fires out. We're going to expand more on the other side. We're going to stick on this story. There's a lot more.
Inflation is up. That's an issue. So how does Berkshire handle that with its business?
Well, we can't handle runaway inflation except not to be there. But there are dozens and dozens of countries that have experienced it. And of course, you have countries that gone bankrupt like 6 or 7 times. I mean, not having faith in the money does to a country. It turns it into something else.
Yeah.
And I've always hoped that, you know, the U.S. never does it. But we are not immune from it happening.
Dollar collapse means we keep continuing on where we are. Dollar devalues. We've got massive inflation. You raise interest rates to slow that inflation down. So the implications of that are bond market is toast because the value of bonds, the price of bonds comes down as interest rates rise. The inverse is also true. When interest rates come down, the value of bonds goes up. So as you raise interest rates, the value of bonds comes down. Who's allocated into bonds? The bond market is way larger than the equity market, the stock market. So you've got pension funds that are allocated into bonds, right? Anybody that's on a fixed income, banks are allocated into bonds. Consider this, an insurance company. Most insurance companies across the country are allocated about 90% into the bond market with their internal portfolios. What does an insurance company do? It pays beneficiaries when people die. Right. So if the asset that they have to sell to pay those beneficiaries is coming down in price, this is going to have a cataclysmic effect on the insurance industry, on pension funds, on everything. And let's be clear, though,
a dollar being the world currency is how we could just print it and buy whatever we wanted. If the world sees it like the Mexican peso or worse, we're screwed.
Yeah, because that was our get out of jail free card. Right. We could print as much money as we want and everybody around the world still needed the U.S. dollar. If you don't have reserve currency status like every other country other than the one that has reserve currency status, when you print excessively, people no longer want your currency. Don't let the news scare you, but rather use the wisdom, the creativity that God gave you. Go into tangible assets that have zero counterparty risk. Silver was up over 140% last year. Since January 30th, when it corrected and it had a 50% correction, went down into the 60s, it's almost 90. Literally, since February, silver's up over 30%, Alex. So you can roll over your IRAs. You have an old 401k, roll that over. Your brokerage accounts, take delivery of it at home or store it at a depository. If you don't want to take delivery of it at home, we'll walk you through that, answer your questions, make sure that you feel comfortable with everything. Because it's ultimately your decision. We're just here to help guide and go on this journey with you. 1,000-ounce bars of silver, 100-ounce bars, 10-ounce bars, or 1-ounce generic refinery rounds.
But then you can roll over the financial instruments, too.
1-ounce gold bars or kilo bars, IRAs. If it has IRA in the name, simple, SEP, Roth, traditional, inherited, we can do that. Or you can do just a brokerage account that you just wire as funds, and it's a non-IRA account.
Is it wholesale? And are they buying it back with no cost? No fee. This is the place to go. And we'll get into gold and silver as well. Dr. Kirk Elliott, KEPM.com/gold. That way they know it comes from us. So it supports the broadcast. KEPM.com/gold or 720-605-3900. 720-605-3900. Call and get a free consultation. Or sign up for email. They'll call you back. They can also roll over a lot of financial instruments. This is the place to go. KEPM.com/gold. So gold and silver is the way to go, the best investment the last 2+ years. And you just check the wholesale price every day. That's what you get it for. You sell it back for no cost. Nobody else of any size does that. That's real.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Keep your hand on your gun.
Welcome back, folks. The murder of Henry Nowak at the hands of a Sikh immigrant to the UK, and really at the hands of the UK police, who likely could have saved his life if they'd taken his complaint seriously, but they didn't. Why didn't they? Because they said he was racist. And that's where the claim that just played on BBC from Henry Nowak's father comes into conflict with everything else that Henry Nowak's father said. He spoke out in front of the courthouse saying, quote, about his son, quote, he told officers he could not breathe 9 times. He said he had been stabbed 4 times, but the officers replied saying, I don't think you have, mate. Why? Why did that happen? What was the cause? What would cause a police officer to ignore these claims from a victim, a stabbing victim? Racism. That's why. Because they were trained about this. They were trained to treat claims of racism as the most important thing. And this all occurred after the death of George Floyd and the UK government, despite having absolutely nothing to do with George Floyd, not having the civil rights movement, not having a history of segregation, not having a history of slavery. They don't have any of the cultural anything that was behind the George Floyd riots and protest and activist movement here in America. And yet they had exactly the same movement in the UK, because at the end of the day, it actually had nothing to do with white cops murdering black people, because that doesn't actually exist. That's not actually a trend. It's not actually a problem that America has. It's also not a problem the UK has. But Black Lives Matter, like so many other activist protest movements recently, are just motivated by general anti-white, anti-European communist hatred, and they dress it up in whatever the outrage of the day seems to be. So the people of the UK are protesting against this and are being attacked by the cops for it, of course. But the concern here is sort of ubiquitous. It's like the same thing over and over again, which is a form of insanity that, like so many other things we talk about, I really have a hard time confronting, because it's so retarded. Hans Machny on X says, the Henry Nowak judge is worried about the safety of Sikhs. The fact that he shares the same false victim oppressor conditioning as the police officers who arrested Nowak shows just how completely British institutions have been permeated by the ideology of collective white guilt. So the judge in the Henry Nowak case said, quote, your actions have stirred up racial tension. He's talking to the knife man here. Your actions have stirred up racial tension. You have brought shame upon your family and your religion, the judge adds. Your actions have stirred up racial tension in Southampton and across the country, which have made many Sikhs worried about their safety. It's a classic Norm MacDonald joke, right? Muslims could set off a dirty nuke in New York City and kill 10 million people. And then, you know, can you imagine the backlash to peaceful Muslims? A Sikh man stabs an 18-year-old white guy to death, and the judge's overriding concern is for the safety of Sikh people. Which, on one hand, makes no sense on the face of it. Obviously, I don't think I need to elaborate. The man doing the stabbing is not the one whose safety should be concerned about. Sikhs demonized after murder, community leader says. Oh, well, what? Because of the murder? What, because of the murder you've been demonized? You talk about it to Israel about how they take, you know, they deal with it. You know, yeah, Sikhs failed to condemn murderers is what that headline should actually say. And literally the condemnations that I've seen, like from the family and from the Sikh community, are literally predicated on this also. They're like, we condemn this murder because it could have backlash to our culture. So, like, on the face of it, it's insane. Oh, a white guy got stabbed by a Sikh. Those poor Sikhs, I hope they're okay. That's crazy on the face of it, obviously. Where it really gets insane is the understanding, as far as I know, through decade upon decade of the most vicious anti-white attacks ever, millions, potentially, girls being groomed and raped, vicious stabbing attacks against little girls at dance class, bombs going off in Manchester Arena. Through all of this, I cannot think of a single instance ever where there was any violent repercussion for the culture that did it. Not one. So, like, on the face of it, it's insane to say the Sikhs stabbed a white guy, therefore the Sikhs need to be protected, those poor Sikhs. On the face of it, it's crazy. But then if you look at the history and you go, this person is concerned about something that has never happened. It's never happened. It, like, actually, it maybe should happen. Like, maybe white people wouldn't be murdered at such a rate if like the Sikh people thought, gee, if I do this, you know, the white people are going to burn my neighborhood and kill my whole family. Maybe I better not mess with the white kids. Sort of used to be the strategy, you know. It used to be a zero tolerance strategy. I always think about this story of Native Americans walking through a white village, and it was two young Native American men. And one of them sees an apple sitting on a table and tells the other one, hey, go steal that apple. And the other one goes, hell no, I'm not stealing that apple from the white people. You think I'm going to steal from white people? Hell no, I'm not going to do that. I like my life. I'm not stealing an apple. So the other guy goes, you know, you're such a coward. You're so scared of these people. You won't even take an apple from them. And it actually goes back and forth and like ramps up to the point where the other guy's like, I'm so not scared. I'm going to take one of their women. And so they actually take one of the white women. And long story short, it starts a war and all of the Indians are gone now. Which I lament. I actually, you know, rue and disapprove of that part of our history. I do wish the Native Americans were around in much, much greater numbers. But the point is, it's like, where'd that attitude go? Where'd that attitude go? Because, yeah, occasionally, you know, you'd have some problems. But in general, it was like, don't even think about touching the white women. Don't even think about touching the white people. Don't take their stuff. Don't mess with their women. They will go insane and kill all of us. Now, if that was still the situation, I could understand this judge's concern. But what we've seen over the last several decades is a bunch of white people singing Don't Look Back in Anger as their daughters' bloody, disfigured bodies lie still warm on the floor. So where is this concern coming from? Like, that is an extra dimension of insanity to all of this, is that there is this persistent, continual, like, important fear. Like, it changes policies that are made. It determines what statements judges are making. And it is so utterly baseless. It really does feel to me like, and this is, you know, when you're tuned in with reality, it feels like everybody else is walking around fixated on, terrified of, designing their government system around the fear of Bigfoot, the fear of Sasquatch. And it's like, this doesn't exist. It's a thing that doesn't exist and that the entire government system is predicated on fighting, a thing that doesn't exist. The violent white supremacist backlash to immigrant violence. If it did exist, the UK wouldn't be in the situation that it's in. But this fabricated, non-existent fear and guilt over being a white person is so pervasive. Literally, when a Sikh person still kills a white person, it's the Sikhs that they're concerned about. Can you find one example? I would love to see one example. One example in the last 100 years, or maybe in 100 years. They actually had balls back then. I'll give you 50 years. 50 years. Let's go back to 1970. Can you find a single instance in which a racial minority has been subject to mob violence in the UK? One instance. Can you find one? Because I could find literally a million instances of foreigners in the UK killing, raping, stabbing, murdering, blowing up, or otherwise disadvantaging, and in some cases, literally eating white British people. There are literally stories of little girls, victims of rape gangs, who they kill and then grind into kebab meat. Okay? Like, this is what we're talking about. And these people are terrified that white people might one day potentially seek revenge. I wish, folks. But it's never going to happen. So again, I mean, these are the levels of insanity that we're trying to deal with. It's multi-layered. It's like you can be peeling back onions for eternity and you'll never get to the bottom of leftist / brainwashed psychopathy. It's all psychotic. I'm going to show you the videos of the protests. We're getting to those, but there's so much background to this. Winston Marshall at MRWIN Marshall on X. How could an English police officer cuff and drag an innocent dying white boy who'd been stabbed 5 times, gasping for his life? Well, after George Floyd in 2020, an incident which had absolutely nothing to do with Britain, the British establishment lost their minds. The police undertook reform. Their new priority, quote, reports of racist behavior or action by officers and staff will be thoroughly investigated and will be dealt with swiftly and robustly with appropriate support for victims and those reporting racist behaviors. Alleged racism became the top priority, as laid out explicitly in the number one priority in the, quote, police race action plan. And whilst this is specific to behavior of police officers and staff themselves, it follows that, one, the institutional culture inevitably influences operational priorities, and two, officers who fail to treat an allegation of racism with sufficient seriousness fear or risk being accused of racism themselves. In the 2025 report that was updated, says, quote, it is not enough for us to not be racist or to claim to not be racist. Anti-racism demands that we are proactive. But crucially, it says, quote, it does not mean treating everyone the same or being colorblind racial equity. It is explicitly against racial equity. It is literally saying, do not treat the races equal. Treat white people worse. Approach white people with the assumption pre-baked into your interpretation of the situation. Come with the assumption embedded that the white people are racist and are bad, and that any claims of racism have to be treated with total seriousness and sincerity. Because you can imagine the other way around. Imagine if the police got called by a Sikh guy who said, I was just attacked by a white person, and they rock up and go, I don't believe you, mate. I think you stabbed him with your big knife. You're under arrest. They would lose their job. Like, the police have to take this into account. And it's what I've been saying forever, and I keep reiterating it at least once a week for the last year, probably, that the police and the criminals change their behavior on the basis of policy. And they know what the policy is, and they change it. You know, we talk about how when they say, hey, we're no longer going to sentence 16 and 17-year-olds as adults, the gangs recruit 16 and 17-year-olds and have them commit crimes for them. In the same way, the Sikh knifeman knows, if I just say you was racist, I'm going to get away with this. Now, he didn't get away with it at the end of the day because he killed the kid, but it wasn't a bad assumption. He got pretty far with it. And remember, they've got the dad of Henry Nowak out there saying this has nothing to do with race. The police officer who arrested his dead son, who read the rights to his unconscious dead son, who pried open his eyes, shined a light in, said his pupils aren't responding because he's dead, you idiot. That woman then searched his phone and searched the father's phone to try to find racist material to continue to smear the dead son and the mourning father as racist. They still tried to save themselves by framing the father and the son as racist. And then they get the father to go up and say, oh, this has nothing to do with race. Don't make this about race. Honestly, pathetic. I get to get, you know, his son died. I literally cannot imagine what it's like going through that. But I also can't imagine your son being murdered and then you going to defend the murderers. That is less comprehensible to me than the grief itself. But of course, we know that Western countries have offices. America had one until November of last year. In November of 2025, Donald Trump closed the Office of Public Relations. Community Relations Service is what's called here in America. The Community Relations Service. Now, I'm thinking about how to say it, because like uncharitably to describe their activity, what they do is literally show up to events in which a white person has been victimized by a black person, and they are there to pressure and blackmail and pull whatever lever necessary to keep that white person silent and to get them to go out and make a statement about how this is definitely not about race, and don't make this about race, and don't politicize this, and don't use this to, you know, determine political policy into the future. Just ignore it. This was just a random tragic accident that you can't, you know, glean any information from. Ignore it. And I was going to say that's an uncharitable way of viewing it, but that's also how they describe themselves. That's actually just what they do. So this is from CBS News back in November of 2025. They're very much against getting rid of this office. And yet when you hear the way it's described, you can tell it's the way I'm describing it is exactly correct. Civil rights groups sue to stop DOJ from closing office tasked with preventing unrest in cities. Oh, they're preventing unrest in cities. How? By getting the victims of crimes to defend the criminals. A group of civil rights organizations is seeking an order to prevent the closure of a Justice Department office dedicated to preventing unrest and violence in U.S. cities. The groups are suing for a preliminary injunction to avert the closure of the Community Relations Service, which was launched in 1964 to avert rioting and racial strife in American communities. Well, they haven't done a great job, have they? Gee, they kind of suck at their job, don't they? Because when when somebody like Austin Metcalf gets stabbed to death at a, school event, having done nothing to anybody, they'll go and pull his father to the side and go, look, this is tragic and we feel really bad for you. And the last thing that you want is your son's tragic death being used for other tragedies. You know, this could really start a feedback loop that once it gets going, it's hard to maintain. So if you can just go and give a statement of solidarity with the African-American community and not contribute to the hatred. Nazis are using your son's death to progress a hateful agenda. You don't want your son's, heritage, his legacy to be hatred, right? Your son was a loving guy. He was a loving person that was friends with everybody. And you need to let everybody know that, right? They come in and they pressure him and they insinuate and they cajole and they get the statement just like you heard Henry Nowak's father say, practically line by line, word for word. It's a script. It's a script they're given to try to tamp down on and push back on any political consequence to the tragedy, to the violent attack. It's not just about, let's stop the hordes of murderous white supremacists from using this as an excuse to attack people because they don't exist. So that's not what it's about. No, it's about people going, the illegal immigrants are stabbing our people. Let's get rid of the illegal immigrants. It's about finding any solution to the problem. They want the problem to continue. While meanwhile, George Floyd's family gets on national TV and goes, burn down the white neighborhoods, not the black neighborhoods. So is the Community Relations Service, is their job to stop rioting? Because they seem to never intervene when it's the criminal's family literally calling for rioting, literally encouraging people to riot and spreading lies that undergird and justify the rioting. They only intervene. They only show up when it's a white person to tell the white family, don't you dare make this about race. Even in the case of Irina Zarutska, where the guy stabs, she's the only white girl in the train car. He slits her freaking throat and then walks around going, I got that white girl. And they'll show up to that family and we don't want to make this about race. There are bad actors out there that want to racialize this random attack from a mentally ill person. And we can't have innocent black people, blamed for something they had nothing to do with. It's your responsibility to go out and, tell these people that they're wrong and that they need to be silent. Which it's just, I don't know, man. It's like psychological torture. I don't know what type of person engages in that type of behavior, but this has been a office in America since the 1960s. European countries realized how effective this was and are using it also. So I can almost guarantee you the thing we heard Henry Nowak's father say was a script given to him by a government agent whose entire purpose is making sure that events like this do not translate into political change. And it's despicable. And again, the way the Community Relations Service describes itself, it's just like outrageous. The office has a history of intervening during periods of heightened national unrest. It was credited with helping prevent another riot in 1993 as racial tensions reemerged after the second trial of police who beat Rodney King in California. Oh, don't you love that? I mean, they've been around since 1964. Not sure what they were doing in 1992, but hey, 1993, they stopped the riots from happening again. Oh, okay. Not available in 1992, they weren't there to stop the riots from destroying the entire city, enforcing martial law and the Insurrection Act. But, the second time around, they really stepped it up. Again, just shows you how ridiculous and pointless they are. if they're, you know, they're pointing to, well, they didn't let it happen again. You know, the thing they let happen, it didn't happen twice. So I think that's a full success, right? Yeah, we're just going to have to stick on this topic because it just goes on and on. Henry Nowak's case is worse than you think. 60 of the 67 minutes which he spent dying in the street were in the custody of police officers. They broke basic rules of policing and PACE, P-A-C-E, denying him basic first aid and compassion because they falsely believed he was racist. I think that's exactly right. And it goes over the actual timeline. Hampshire police officers arrived at 11:37 p.m., perhaps as little as 7 minutes after the stabbing was over, to a scene framed by falsehoods. Of the 67 minutes elapsed between the attack and Nowak's death, approximately 60 of these were in the presence of police officers who broke many of the basic rules of policing and Police and Criminal Evidence Act in its codes. The police say, we're sorry. Sorry for treating stabbing victim as racist while he lay dying, say the police. Oh, whoops, whoopsie daisy. It was an accident. And it goes over all the various codes that they broke in this case. People like this, I think, express a general feeling in the UK. Classic Hex at Doomer Coomer on X says, I'm so effing angry. Even our deaths, even when they murder us, it's about effing them and their safety. I'm so effing sick of these people, this ideology. All of it needs to be purged. Restore isn't good enough if they don't plan on putting these people behind bars too. I think they do. I think Restore, I think Lowe is right there on the same page with you. And again, this is in response to the judge saying the action, you murdering a white person, has made some Sikhs feel unsafe. And that's the real tragedy. That's the real tragedy at the end of the day. I don't know what you do from here. I mean, I do know. It's violence. I'm sorry. What you do from here is you commit violence, people that are committing violence against you. I think that might be the only way. So I want to ask again, what is going to happen at the end of these protests? Let's go ahead and roll clip four here. This is what the protest looked like earlier today. We'll show you what it descended into. Let's go ahead and roll clip four here. Thousands of Brits march outside of Southampton Police Station in honor of Henry Nowak, demanding police be held accountable. But what happens when they aren't? Or what happens when they're given some sort of symbolic slap on the wrist punishment and nothing changes? What happens when another 600 hostile foreigners, military-aged men, arrive on dinghies today and tomorrow and the day after that? What good is expressing your outrage to a government that is well aware of it, that doesn't care, that basically is just rewriting laws to throw you in prison for expressing the things you're expressing? How is this protest going to change things? We'll get into that on the other side. Stay with us.
Folks, I'm Dr. Bigley. Today's presentation will be about methylene blue and you.
Dr. Bigley, what does methylene blue do?
Great question, Billy. It has to do with your mitochondria, the powerhouse of your cells. Let's bring out the mitochondria now!
Right.
As I was saying, methylene blue supercharges your mitochondria, which does wonders for your mental clarity, stamina, and overall pep. Just look at him go!
Dr. Bigley, he must have drank a lot of methylene blue. He was bouncing off the walls.
Right you are, Billy. He sure drank a lot. Let's continue, shall we?
Billy, did you know that methylene blue can cure communism?
No, sir. Can I see?
Why, certainly, Billy. Take a look over there.
Behold, Ivan, a Ruski doggedly determined to undermine our way of life. Careful, Billy. He bites. Oh, look, vodka, potato hooch. Watch. The communism is slowly leaving his body.
Wow, the methylene blue cured the red right out of him.
So, how do you feel?
Gee, Doc, I don't know what got into me. I feel like $1 million now. Say, where can I get some more of that blue stuff in case I become retarded again?
You can find it on the alexjonesstore.com.
What does .com mean?
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
In a bombshell development buried deep in the House Armed Services Committee's draft for the fiscal year 2027 National Defense Authorization Act, Section 224 establishes the so-called United States-Israel Defense Technology Cooperation Initiative. It demands the Secretary of Defense appoint a dedicated executive agent to synchronize U.S. and Israeli efforts across artificial intelligence, cyber operations, biotechnology, quantum computing, autonomous systems, directed energy weapons, and missile tech. This isn't a partnership. It's a technocratic fusion with calls for bilateral R&D, co-production of weapons, joint ventures, licensing deals, network integration, and full data fusion. American military secrets could soon flow directly to the IDF. This initiative builds on decades of over $200 billion in U.S. taxpayer support to Israel, but takes it to unprecedented levels by embedding Israeli influence directly into the Pentagon's decision-making and industrial base, creating co-production facilities on U.S. soil, generating jobs that lock in congressional support while handing Israel leverage over American defense priorities. Data sharing and network integration raise massive red flags for espionage risks and the loss of strategic autonomy. Transparent American oversight would be a relic of the past.
They're taking it off budget and nesting it inside the classified ledgers of the Pentagon, which last time I checked, if you add it all up, there's over $15 trillion been stolen or disappeared starting in the mid-1990s until now. And of course, they just failed their audit again. In it, and I've got the subsections here, it says that Israel's funding and military operations will just go into the classified divisions of the Pentagon, and then through those mechanisms, you don't even know how much money they're going to get. And they're calling it partnership with Israel on weapons and so and security so and intelligence. So that's why Netanyahu's like, hey, we want to wean ourselves off of Washington. Oh, Israel's going to get off our tit. Nope, sorry. Israel is going to literally slice us open and crawl inside our belly and just feed inside our stomach itself at point-blank range. So Israel's not going to just be hanging off the hind tit now. Israel's going to, like a face sucker, plant an egg in our stomach, and then it just feeds inside our stomach till it grows up to a big enough level, and then boom, 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 punches its way out and comes out and says, here's Johnny.
As this technocratic fusion advances, it will further enforce Israel's reach into suppressing American dissent amid a wave of new laws and the outsized role of dual citizens in rewriting the rules of our Constitution. With anti-BDS measures already embedded in numerous state contracts and federal proposals, and broader efforts to equate criticism of Israeli policy with anti-Semitism gaining traction, this deepened military-industrial integration creates powerful new levers. What begins as cooperation risks becoming a framework where questioning Section 224 itself triggers accelerating the criminalization of dissent under the guise of national security. Most of us assumed America First meant no secret mergers, especially mergers undermining the military and the will of we the people. Section 224 must be ripped out of the 2027 NDAA post-haste. John Baum reporting for the Alex Jones Network.
I want to thank the viewers and listeners for keeping us on air the last 32 years. you get all the credit. The word of mouth, the prayer, the support of us at TheAlexJonesStore.com. Now, InfoWars has been shut down, but we're now at the Alex Jones Network. But The Onion, financed by Bloomberg and the Democrats, is all over the news saying we're shut down, we're off the air, and that they successfully took over the company. That's not true. We're still fighting them in court. But the Alex Jones Network that I don't own, that they can't shut down, that's owned by Bigley, and our sponsor, TheAlexJonesStore.com, is financing the expansion, not just of the current shows, but bringing more shows on, more reporters, and really taking to the globalists, and finishing up the big studios that are even better than the InfoWars studios. So I want to thank you all for your financial support at TheAlexJonesStore.com. But most importantly, let your whole email list, your text message list, everybody know. Post on X, post on...
I'll start with sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex.
This is rocket fuel. This is incredible. This is rocket fuel. Because I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex. This is a cocktail I drink every day. A squirt of ultramethylene blue and T3. You are insane if you don't get it. Okay? Well, listen. You are insane if you don't get it. I am a wrecking ball. I am obsessed with this. I can't stop. And now I'm having this. Because I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex. This is the truth. Because I'm a sexual Tyrannosaurus Rex. You understand that? Does that burn into your brain?
I think I'm going to buy some methylene blue now.
TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Welcome back, folks. This is War Room Live. We're talking about what's going on in the UK with Henry Nowak. And we'll show you some pretty incredible video out of the protest that was sparked today at the police station for the police responsible for Henry Nowak's death. We'll show you those videos and give you more context into all of this. Again, I didn't really expect to be spending so much time on this today, but the riot that's broken out is definitely worth spending time on. I do want to go to another video here momentarily. Clip 33 is from Savannah Hernandez, because related to the Henry Nowak stabbing is, of course, the Austin Metcalf stabbing. And the fact that Carmelo Anthony, a black guy, stabbed him to death for no reason and then was given $500,000 by the black community, despite there being absolutely no proof whatsoever it was anything other than a cold-blooded murder, which I think is worth reminding ourselves of sort of the cultural reality that we exist in. Well, Carmelo Anthony's trial has finally begun. Of course, Austin Metcalf died on the bleachers back then. In the meantime, his murderer has been able to graduate and go to prom and be a free man this entire time, as his family was given $500,000, bought a new house, bought some new cars, and then said they had no money and needed the lawyer to be paid for by the taxpayers. So I don't think, you know, the UK is really that much farther down the road than we are at this point. Here's Savannah Hernandez in Collin County, where the murderer of Austin Metcalf is now facing trial. Let's watch.
This is Savannah Hernandez in front of the Collin County Courthouse in McKinney, Texas, for day one of the Carmelo Anthony trial. Now, today and tomorrow is jury selection, and opening arguments for this trial are not until Thursday if the jury can be selected on time. Now, to give you guys an idea of what has already happened so far, this morning you had somebody who was kicked out of the courthouse for trying to film potential jurors, and you already had protesters here on behalf of both Austin Metcalf and Carmelo Anthony, with the protesters for Carmelo Michael Anthony coming out in greater numbers. Now, some quick pointers on this trial. What is not being discussed is whether or not Carmelo Anthony actually murdered Austin Metcalf. He has already admitted to that, stating that he acted in self-defense. But what is being debated is whether or not Carmelo Anthony acted in self-defense or whether he committed murder. Now, interesting caveat as well, because Carmelo Anthony was only 17 years old when the killing occurred, he is ineligible for the death penalty. So even if he is found guilty, the maximum sentence that he's going to get is life in prison. Now, Carmelo Anthony is already facing a first-degree murder charge and was initially held on a $1 million bond that he did petition to get reduced to $250,000. He cited financial difficulties, and a Collin County judge ended up reducing that for him. So he has since been on house arrest and out on bond after being issued that. Now, a lot of the controversy in this case did surround the GoFundMe that was created by Carmelo Anthony's family. Now, the family raised over $500,000, and it was found out that they were living in a home that was almost $1 million. A neighbor alleged that they had bought a new vehicle, and a family spokesperson stated that they were going to be utilizing these funds for security, legal defense, and also for the fight against white supremacy, stating that the criticism, the harassment, and threats that Carmelo Anthony were receiving after the stabbing incident were a direct result of white supremacy and racism in the nation. Now, simultaneously, the Metcalf family was also dealing with quite a bit of harassment and threats as well, and they were swatted three separate times. Just to give you guys a reminder of what happened in the lead up to this case. Now, again, there have been extremely strict rules imposed on the media for this trial. And just to give you guys an idea of how secure they are trying to keep the courthouse grounds, the entire road behind me has been blocked off. They have specific places for protesters. There's also a strict curfew, and nobody can be on courthouse grounds from 11 p.m. to 6 a.m. And law enforcement has also secured a separate entrance for Carmelo Anthony and his family to exit and enter the courtroom. So an idea of, again, not only the strict gag order that has been put in place by this judge, the strict media rules, but also the other levels of precaution that are being taken to ensure that everybody in the courthouse and around the courthouse is safe and protected. So keep following along all week, because I will be on the ground covering this trial. Keep following me for more updates.
Frontline TPUSA, that's Savannah Hernandez, at Sav Says underscore on X. More protesters on Carmelo Anthony's side. There's no debate here. There was no fight. And frankly, I thought I remember there being cameras. So, you know, the question as to whether or not it was self-defense should be solved pretty quickly. And it wasn't self-defense, I'll tell you that right now. It's actually impossible to be self-defense because the kid was trespassing in the first place. But regardless, what do you say about, like, what do we say about that? You've got people going to support a murderer. Like, it's not a question about whether he's a murderer. It's not a question, really, about whether he was, quote-unquote, defending himself. They literally are just there to support somebody because he murdered white people. And that's the world that we live in. And at the same time that we have just despicable racists like that expressing themselves, you know, anti-white racists who are literally just like, yeah, we're here to support the murderer. We're here to support the murderer because we hated the kid. You've got them setting up barricades for the non-existent threat of the white supremacist attack that was never going to come in the first place. It's just truly insane. Truly insane. In the UK, if anything is worse, but not much, again, thousands march outside Southampton Police Station in honor of Henry Nowak, demanding police be held accountable. We just saw one video of just the sheer size of the crowd. Let's go to the B-roll video now. This is, again, the crowd. Before it got violent, before it broke out, they were chanting, I can't breathe. Of course, the exact same slogan from George Floyd, only it's not a slogan, it's just literally what they were saying. And again, here you can see just the sheer size of the crowd. Let's listen in.
The men for a women police
are- I can't breathe! I can't breathe! I can't breathe! I can't breathe! I can't breathe!
The government makes a...
You know what's interesting? Is how white this crowd is. There's a lot of white people in this crowd. You know what it looks like? Looks like a Black Lives Matter protest. Because white people will come out first. Do you see the point I'm making? Wouldn't you think that there would also be perhaps a sizable contingent of those lovely new British people, you know, the new Europeans, like the Jewish supremacists like to call them, the new Europeans that are in fact Arabic, that are in fact Pakistani or Bangladeshi? You know, if they're the new Europeans and they're just as European as anybody else, you'd expect one or two of them to accidentally stumble into a protest against the violent murder and cover up by the police. Because you understand, the mainstream media is not reporting on this. The mainstream media is ignoring this outright. I saw a comparison today. I thought I had it, but I didn't see it printed. New York Times has not published a single story about Henry Nowak. Do you know how many stories they published about George Floyd? 6,500. The New York Times published 6,500 stories about a career criminal overdosing on fentanyl. The university student walking home when attacked and murdered and then called a racist and arrested as he lay dying hasn't graced their page one single time. You think there's a racial political motivation behind that? And where do you think we would be if Elon Musk had not purchased Twitter? Do you think any of us would have heard this story? At all? We certainly wouldn't have the video. We certainly wouldn't have the protests. Maybe we'd get a story or two in Daily Mail. And it would fade away with the rest of the stories about, you know, celebrities being embarrassed. But the mainstream media is not covering this. And they certainly are not laying out the argument, as they should be, that what happened to Henry Nowak is in fact a symptom of a societal problem that needs correction. We would have never heard Henry Nowak's name if not for Elon Musk buying X. This would have gone totally unremarked. And it's a beautiful thing that never again will the mainstream media and the police get to get away with this stuff scot-free, as they have up till now. Let's go to these next videos. So you see the size of the crowd. You can see that it was largely peaceful. In fact, entirely peaceful. And they were chanting, "I can't breathe." They were asking that the police take a knee. Now, of course, if you remember, or even if you don't, this did happen in 2020. In June 2020, exactly 6 years ago, the Metropolitan Police in the UK permitted officers to take the knee during Black Lives Matter protests as a personal choice. Several Met officers were photographed kneeling in solidarity with protesters outside Downing Street, a gesture originally popularized by Colin Kaepernick to protest police brutality and racism. So in 2020, when again, a career criminal in America overdoses on fentanyl, and for some reason, a bunch of black people in the UK decide it's a good excuse to tear down statues of Winston Churchill, and the UK government goes along with this and says it's an important thing and forget the lockdown. This is more important. Protesting non-existent racism that occurred in a country 3,000 miles away is more important than the lockdown that we're forcing on you to a degree that your grandmother has to die alone, not being hugged by her children, but instead peering at them through a slate of plexiglass. I don't know how much longer we can talk about all this stuff. And I really genuinely hope that this is a inflection point. I hoped that the protests last time were the inflection point. After all, that was a protest about several murdered little girls. And yet, when the British people started protesting and rioting about that, they were all sent to prison for years, even if all they did was post on Facebook. And they arrested so many people that they overcrowded the prisons, started letting murderers out to make room, and created an entirely new jury-free pipeline so the judges could jail as many protesters as they possibly could. They literally set up a temporary court system that would operate 24 hours a day so that they could imprison British people protesting day and night over the mass death that occurred as a direct consequence of the policies of the UK government. So let's go back. Let's watch this video from the beginning, the one that we just showed. But let's watch from the beginning because you'll see it's the police that started. The police rush this crowd that is just standing there yelling things at them. Let's watch. There you go. And they rush and attack them with the shields. And so the crowd pushes back. Kind of reminiscent of January 6th, if you ask me. Peaceful protest, crowd just expressing themselves, even angrily, but expressing themselves peacefully when the police decide to just slam a plexiglass shield into their face. And they're demanding the cops take a knee. And in fact, there were many cases, many instances during this riot, or during this protest rather, that has since turned into a riot, where, yeah, a bunch of people were taking the knee, and the police completely ignored it, if not attacked the people who were taking a knee. So we can go to the next video now. We should go on to the next one. Go down the list. So if that was 36, this is 37. Let's watch.
Killed now, guys. The police are getting killed now.
So there's the police actually being driven back by the protesters.
The police are getting outnumbered now.
We need more of this. We need more of this. This is literally the only thing they understand. I'm not kidding.
A little bit of police brutality here now. Sorry, mate.
Look, they're getting them cornered now.
They're getting chucked in.
Yeah. No, this they will actually respond. But you can't let up. The problem is if you let up, then they just use facial recognition to identify everybody involved in this protest and arrest them one by one in the middle of the night. You have to keep the pressure up until they bend to your demands. That's the way this works. Here's the next video. In this, you actually see the police kneeing somebody in the head that they've arrested. Now, again, there, look, kneeing the man in the head. Again, when George Floyd dies, and a bunch of black people in the UK are ripping down statues and throwing them into the river, the police kneel. They kneel with them and they show them respect and concern. And then they change laws to train every police officer in the country to be more racist against white people. They make policy changes. They take a knee symbolically, literally. They comport themselves to the demands of the protesters when they're protesting something that is fake, 1,000 miles away, doesn't actually exist in America, but has even less to do with the UK. As long as your protest is utterly unmoored from reality, can never possibly change things in a positive direction, then you will not only be allowed to protest, you'll be allowed to burn things, you'll be allowed to destroy things, and the police will literally kneel before you as you do it. If, however, you're outraged that your government let in foreigners that don't belong, let them carry around giant knives, trained their police to take claims of racism as more important than claims of being stabbed, who then arrest a victim who dies in their custody because they refused to even check if he was actually the victim of the crime. Then they'll beat your ass and knee you in the head and haul you away and throw you to jail for 2 years. So look, might not be smart for me to call for violence, but I'm not. I'm just telling you, if you want to fix things, that's what's necessary. Right? I wouldn't tell you to commit violence. I am pointing out it is the only viable strategy moving forward. Not random, chaotic violence against innocent people. Directed, purposeful violence against the actual manifestation of the state and the people that made the decisions that have led to the consequences that you're now protesting. And again, you know, why do you think they don't go after Muslims? I mean, during the Southport riots, when they were creating this, you know, alternative court system to imprison the most number of people on speech crimes that they possibly could, there were mobs of Muslims literally wandering the streets with golf clubs and baseball bats, beating the crap out of any white person they found. We showed the videos. I mean, there were dozens of them. showing up in restaurants where white people were just sitting out on the patio and literally attacking them. Police never showed up. I mean, there's video in one instance where a police officer stops a gang of Muslims who are wandering around with weapons and simply asks them to return the weapons to the mosque. Doesn't arrest them, doesn't confiscate the weapons, just says, go put the weapons back in the mosque. I mean, you can call it two-tier policing. I don't know what you call it. I just call it anarcho-tyranny. I just call it, you know, a humiliation ritual of a conquered people. Oh, we don't even have to go that far back. A month ago, two Jewish guys and a Muslim guy were stabbed by a crazy dude who clearly wasn't targeting them because they were Jewish. Neither one of them died, and yet you saw Keir Starmer give multiple speeches where he made it a center point, and he promised the Jewish people in the UK that they would not have to fear because everything that the government could do to guarantee their safety would be done. Everything they could possibly want will be provided for them. And Keir Starmer himself expressed the deep personal shame he felt at allowing the innocent Jewish community to suffer under violence like this. When again, it was a random stabbing in which a Muslim person was also stabbed. And then the media would run headlines that would say two Jews stabbed in wherever. And then later, like down the period, it'd be like, also a Muslim guy was stabbed. They literally don't even mention the other. So again, white guy gets stabbed and it's Keir Starmer like, shut up. We don't care. The police will beat you. The police arrest you. Again, it's just, we can compare it all day. It just goes on and on. Let's go back to the video. This is what this protest has now devolved into. And you see them trying to leave, trying to, the police trying to get out. And yeah, so what's going to happen after this is the police are going to get reinforcements, right? They're going to come back like 300 strong. They're going to have horses. They're going to have cannons, you know, water cannons or sound cannons. And they're going to disperse this with violence. And then they're going to systematically go through. And it might be a week from now, a month from now, or a year from now. But they will try, just like they did with the January 6th protesters, they'll do a sedition hunter operation to arrest all these people. Unless you win. Unless you keep the pressure up. Unless when the cops show up with their reinforcements, you send them packing too, right? And again, I wish this wasn't the case. If it was up to me, then when the people of Europe vote to get rid of immigrants, then they would just get rid of immigrants. When they would protest and express outrage about the immigrants, then they would get rid of the immigrant. When the will of the people of Britain is expressed with such absolute certainty, then the British government would at least show them a modicum of concern and respect. But that's not the case. That's just not the case. And so now, what happens? I don't want this to be a replay of the Southport riots, but I'm afraid that's what it's going to be. And again, those who make peaceful revolution impossible make violent revolution inevitable. And if there's one clear message being sent to the people of Europe by their governments, the people of the UK by the UK government, it is that they are going to stick to the policies that are destroying you no matter how you feel about it. They don't care. They don't care. Because they don't care about you, because they have no concern about the people of the UK. They have no concern about the people of Ireland. It doesn't take some sort of, you know, philosophical, political, deep understanding for the simple human empathy that says, hey, if there's a little old lady that's lived in the same house for 80 years and she doesn't want 300 adult Arab men planted four streets away, it doesn't take a superhuman, it doesn't take a political genius, it doesn't take a right winger to have empathy for that person. It takes a left-winger, a globalist, a psychopath, an anti-white scumbag to see that and think, grandma's evil and needs to be destroyed. She needs to be arrested and thrown into prison, and we're going to send the Garda to smash her in the face with a baton as we move in the men into her township. Talking is over. We should be done talking about any of this. When Barack Obama's birth certificate came out, and I went to the government website, I downloaded the birth certificate, I put it into Adobe Photoshop, I separated the layers, and I thought, this is crazy. They released a fake birth certificate. I didn't need somebody to tell me that. I didn't read somebody say that and just believe it on trust of them. I did it myself. I saw it with my own eyes. I did it with my own hands. And then I tell my friend, he's like, you know, that's racist, right? I'm like, what? No, I just did it. And they're like, you know, it's like a racist conspiracy theory, right? You're like, what? What is going on? So if you've experienced that, the reason is some people do not have the chemical balance to handle things like that. You need a lot of testosterone to handle things like that. You need to have your mind not warped and distorted by the dopamine feedback loop that social media is designed to create in your brain to enforce you into the pre-established, preordained, approved of mindset. So if you're here, you probably already are winning the chemical war over your own body. But that's why we sell the supplements that we do. Pretty much everybody takes out. Who doesn't take vitamins? Who doesn't supplement in some way or another? Who doesn't add a protein scoop when they get a smoothie at the store? Or take vitamin D or vitamin C or fish oil, you know, before bed or you know, when you wake up? Isn't a crazy thing. This isn't an out there woo-woo type of thing. Everybody takes supplements. Everybody I know takes supplements. And if you're not, you should be. And so all we do is get the best supplements on the market, white label them. And so you get them from us, you're probably getting a better price than at the store. And you're absolutely getting the best possible quality of all of these products. If you're here for the first time and don't know why you would support us, because you get the information for free, because the streams are free, because there's no obligation for you to support us, that's all part of the strategy. The fact is, we're able to keep this free because you go to thealexjonesstore.com. Put this information into action. You have to understand the attack on humanity itself and then fight back against it in two different ways. One, by advocating and trying to seize power politically to change things from the top down. But while that's going on, you've got to be protecting yourself against this stuff. And we have a lot of supplements and vitamins and minerals and merchandise for you to do exactly that. Things like Atomic Defense, Methylene Blue, Methylene Red. These things are extremely powerful and combat exactly the type of poisons that we talk about on a continual basis. So I'm not a medical doctor. I'm not making claims here. I'm not saying it's going to, you know, cure any diseases or anything. But I'm saying that in the modern world, it's microplastics and, atrazine and herbicides and growth hormones and fluoride that they put in the water on purpose because they want you dumb. You have to combat these things. You have to be protecting yourself and building up your internal shield so you can even handle the information that we're bringing to you. And that really is a thing. Testosterone, the higher your testosterone is, the more likely you are to go against the grain, to reject the herd mentality of the crowd and instead pursue justice or pursue the truth, regardless of who says anything about it. And there's a chemical balance that has to be achieved there. But that's why there's such an attempt to lower your IQ, lower your testosterone, lower your masculinity, lower your self-sufficiency, lower your self-confidence. Because they want you a tired, weak, overwhelmed, overworked slave. That's what the people in power have designed this world to do to you. And you don't have to take it. You can fight back. You can protect yourself. You can reverse the effects of the damage that's done to your body as it is to all of our bodies by going to the Alex Jones store and getting a product.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back, folks. Final segment of today's program. More video coming out. The ongoing riots in the UK. I like this from Gammon Gazette. Says the left says, you can't blame all Sikhs for killing Henry Nowak. You can't blame all Muslims for Islamic terrorist attacks. You can't blame all Pakistanis for grooming gangs, but all white people today are to blame for slavery in the 1800s. It's not, you know, something we've heard a bunch before, but I mean, we either need to have it one way or the other. And honestly, it's like, but for our own safety, you know, maybe collective punishment is the way to go. Obviously not throwing people in prison if they didn't commit a crime, but deporting them, certainly. If they're for, I mean, if you have a foreign, you have 10 members of a foreign family, one of them kills your citizen, and then the rest of them helped cover it up. And then during the sentencing, your family yells out racist in the courtroom, accusing the judge of racism for sending you to jail, for sending your family member to jail for murdering somebody. Yeah, the whole family needs to go. The whole clan needs to go. The whole tribe needs to go. It's pretty simple. And maybe, just maybe, by treating this in a, you know, as a clan-wide phenomenon, maybe members of other clans will think, gee, my whole family's going to get sent back to Bangladesh if I get caught doing something bad. I better not get caught doing something bad. I better not do anything bad. It actually would be a, I think that'd actually be a pretty good way to dissuade people from committing these types of crimes. But you got to do something. You got to figure something out. And apparently things are devolving. We can go now to that clip. Nationalists and locals have gathered outside the Islamic sect cult in Crewe and are launching fireworks. This is the same cult that had members arrested on suspicion of child rape. Let's watch the fireworks here. So they're apparently setting off fireworks at this Islamic cult compound. Let's go to the video. Southampton police station. Protesters in Southampton are furious. They say, take the knee and pay your respects for Henry. This will be number 41, clip 41 here. This is a very interesting exchange that begins with the protesters demanding the police take a knee, which the police go, no, absolutely not. Taking a knee? No way. For a white person? For a thing that actually happened? Never, never. We do that for hateful, racist minorities that kill themselves with drugs. That's the only people we kneel for. Let's watch.
Shame, didn't it? I'm not gonna lie, bad now when people do stuff like this, are you?
Disgusting! Huh? It's disgusting! Yeah, but see how you all study, huh? Take the knee and pay your respect for Henry. Your officers assisted in that man's death. I've drove 4.5 hours to get here. I am for you, him, and every police officer in the force. Your left ideology is walking and is ruining the country. We're sick of it. It's disgusting.
All you do is just stand
there. You just stand there. You're horrible, you're vile, you don't care. Look at all of these people who have come to show their respect for Henry. 3 weeks. Sweep under the carpet like Labour government always do. Keir Starmer should have been gone by now. You don't care. He brushes it all off. Muppets, mate.
What are you gonna do? Put me in cuffs and kill me, yeah? Is that what you're gonna do, yeah?
They won't do, mate. They won't do, mate.
You're scumbag, mate. That's what you are. Scumbag.
Tell him, lad.
Whole Hampshire Peace Force. Scumbag.
There he is,
lad. There you go. I love those guys. And I stand corrected as a black dude there standing up, which is the point I'm making, right? It's like, it is weird. It's weird that you almost only ever see white people at protests like this. Do you got to be white to want to protest the police handcuffing a stabbing victim while he bleeds out? Is that a white, that's a white thing? That's an aspect of white culture? Shouldn't be. It shouldn't be. And it is just one of the baffling things about all of this, which is like, how is nobody on our side? It's crazy. So we're on everybody's side. Look at the Black Lives Matter protests. 90% of them were white people coming out. Now, it's a bad thing because what they're coming out to support or what they were coming out to protest didn't exist, and what they're coming out to support was the systematic dismantling of their entire country, their heritage, their safety and public life. So they're stupid, but I still think it's admirable that people go out and protest, you know, discrimination or some sort of oppression, even if they're not the ones feeling it. Even if you're not the one subject to it, you should still be against oppression. Even if you're not the ones who are the victim of senseless, random violence against innocents, you should still be able to empathize with the victims, right? We don't see that very often, unfortunately. You see more often the collective protection of even the worst in these minority communities, which is a problem that compounds all the other problems. Let's go now to clip number 42. This is from Grift Report on X. And this is just a few minutes ago, I understand, maybe an hour ago. But as the sun goes down, you have Polish lads. Now, apparently, Nowak was also Polish. I'm not sure if he was an immigrant or if his parents were immigrants, but I saw people going, well, you know, Nowak was also an immigrant, so really you're just mad about this because of race. It's like, first of all, okay, and he was targeted because of his race. Why wouldn't we make it about race? He was murdered because of his race. That's obvious. I'll show you the 999 call here in just a second. Let's go to this clip now. These are the, I guess, Polish people in UK fighting the police. Let's watch.
No. Here with the shields again. Watch out, Bob, yeah, because this one's a bit trigger-happy. No, not this one. This one's trigger-happy, yeah? Not this one. Yeah. I've got my press pass as well, like, you know? Pardon?
So they're standing off in you know, sort of a standoff against the police, but there's the police attacking the guys, and the guys start attacking back. Yeah, I don't know. If I was the police, I'm not sure if I would want to start that. I think I would be waiting for them to start things. These guys are a lot bigger than the police. These guys look like they're a lot more rough and tumble than the police are. But yeah, we should be arming these people. I mean, we should be running guns to these people. We should be running guns to the people of the UK and Ireland just like we ran guns to the people of Syria. Because, well, you know, once again, just like every other situation we're describing, the situation in Syria wasn't actually what was described, but was still used as justification to send them weapons. Here we have an instance of just the most egregious example of a government being against its own people, attacking and imprisoning its own people. I mean, I guarantee you the UK imprisons more people for speech crimes than Bashar al-Assad ever did. They imprison like 100 times more people than Russia per capita. They're the enslaved populace. They are the people who genuinely require somebody to deliver freedom to them, deliver democracy to them. Because while they might call themselves a democracy, the people of Britain have voted over and over and over to not have Muslim immigrants, and they just get more and more Muslim immigrants. So I don't think you're in a democracy, actually. I think you're in a tyranny that likes to pretend to be in a democracy to legitimize their tyranny. It's not that complicated. None of it's that complicated. Let's go now to the 999 call. I haven't actually listened to this, but this was just released while we were live today. So I want to hear it. The 999 call from Henry Nowak's murderer, Vikram Digwa, and his brother has been released. So this is Vikram's brother making the call to 999, which, yeah, I guess it makes sense because, like, you got to call the cops, right? They can't just have, like, the body of a dead kid found on their lawn the next day. That wouldn't look good for them. So they got to come up with a story. All right, we got to call 999. We got to get this, you know, taken care of. This kid I just murdered, we got to get him taken out of here. Let's set it up to where they think that I'm the victim in all of this. And they thought they'd get away with this because they know how racist the UK police are. And they probably had a pretty good chance of getting away with it. Let's watch.
Sorry, we just got attacked racially by some white person.
Right, okay.
Whereabouts are you?
We're on Belmont Road.
Just out in the street, are you?
Sorry?
You're just in the street?
Yeah, literally. I just parked up my car to come home, and he's attacked my brother.
You're talking about verbally or physically?
No, no, he physically attacked my brother. We're Sikhs, we wear turban, and he's just attacked my brother.
Have any weapons been involved?
No, no, no. No. What did he say to you?
Oh, who do you think you are? No, no, no. I said, look, bro, you're drunk, carry on, walk on. Then I go, he goes, oh, who do you think I'm a bad man? I said, oh, look, I'm a bad man. I'm
Jeffrey, what did he say? Was he racially abusive?
The police need a report. Come here. Yeah, he was. So basically, he stumbled into my brother.
Yeah.
So he stumbled. Do you want to speak to my brother?
No, you carry on. He stumbled into him, and then what did he
do? So he stumbled into you, and then what?
Yeah, so he's walked into him and stumbled. He's drunk. I've clearly said to him, look, yeah, look, mate, you're drunk. Carry on about your day. Do what you need to do.
And then what?
Then he goes to me, who do you think you are? Who do you think you are?
He goes, who do you think you are? Who do you think you are to my brother? And then what?
And then he goes, oh, you're this, you're that. Who do you think you're a bad man? I was like, yeah, I'm a bad man. What? Then he starts recording me.
Right.
As he's recording me, I snatched his phone. He's then laid a punch onto me. He's pushed me back and my turban's come off. He started then grabbing my head. So I then grabbed him and then he started pushing me, attacking me even further and everything like that.
At the minute, now he's lying on the floor. He was trying to get away. He jumped over some bins and stuff on the other neighbour's side. He jumped over the bins and tried to leave through the bin way. He's left a shoe here as well.
So he doesn't have any injuries?
He's hurt his face. I think he's fallen because when he tried to climb over the bin, he's fallen from the one side of the bins over the gates to the other side.
I think he needs medical attention.
Does he need medical attention, you reckon? He will, yeah, I believe, yeah.
Just to confirm, no one's seen any weapons?
No, no. I don't know what weapons it would be.
All right, so that's the brother of the murderer lying about the existence of a weapon, the knife that the mother had already collected and taken away to hide to cover it up. It was a family affair. Again, you could hear Henry, I guess, talking there, saying, who do you think you are? It's so crazy. Yeah, no, the guy tries to, like, act like he's a victim. He's like, yeah, my eye's sort of swollen here, you can tell. So, like, even that, why would you not go, yeah, he needs medical attention, I think he's really drunk, you know, he's, like, passing out, you know. They had a chance there to, at the very least, save the guy's life, right? No weapon at all. Not even sure what weapon there would be. By the way, I'm pretty sure he's still holding the knife in this footage. The murderer. There's the ghost white hand, already drained of blood, already immobile. Yeah. Brutal. So, yeah, I think the UK has a very, very good reason to protest and really to overthrow their government and to replace it with a government that actually cares about them and actually even just bare minimum pretends to care about them. That'd be a start, right? That'd be something. I just saw another post that I thought was extremely, extremely accurate, which again, it's just, you know, it's the same thing over and over, but it's like, you've got to actually do something about this. From Hugh Anthony at The Hugh Anthony on X. Jews get their own private ambulances and police force. Sikhs get to legally carry daggers. Blacks get their own specialized health care in the UK. Muslims get their own areas of government-funded buildings. What do white people get? Nothing. We get targeted by the system instead. Toadtown nationalists, knives are banned in Britain, unless you're part of the special brown guy knife religion, in which case, obviously, do whatever you want. And, like, yeah, I guess so. I guess that's the law. I guess that's it. You know, I saw a video today that was a woman, you know, clearly a leftist, and she's just gushing about the UK health system And she's like, I came down with an infection while I was there. And I called, and 30 minutes later, I saw a doctor, and then I went and got my prescription, and I paid full price, and it was $9, and it was so amazing. Oh, my God. It's like, okay, first of all, that's what life is like in America if you have a job. That is also what happens. It's not exactly special. But, yeah, I'm sure the NHS is really good at handing out average antibiotic, you know, prescriptions for everyday illnesses. You know, I would try, yeah, and venereal diseases, by the way, which I'm pretty sure that she's like, we don't need to get into what it was, but you know, I had a flare up and I needed some antibiotics. So yeah, like if that's what the NHS was, you know, great. I bet they could do it. You know, you call a number in, you go, hey, I got a rash, and they'll send you rash cream, and what do you know? Problem solved. The problem actually arises when you have a deadly disease, when you severely hurt yourself. And suddenly, instead of a 30-minute call that works perfectly, you're sitting in the emergency room for 9 hours straight in agonizing pain, and then you die. I had one of the first reports I did, probably one of the first three reports I ever did at InfoWars, was called, thanks for using NHS, sorry you went blind and died. Because there was, Matt just told me a stat here. The average wait time is roughly 3 months to see a doctor in the UK. Yeah, I'm not surprised. So apparently there's an 18-week standard, a constitutional 18-week standard to get you, appearances. And then there's things like this. This story's from today. Newcastle student Libby Enstone, 20 years old, died in agony after hospital staff ignored her so they could watch the Women's World Cup. Folks, the Women's World Cup. Okay, that's how bad it is. A 20-year-old student died in agony after hospital staff allegedly ignored her to watch the Women's World Cup. Libby Enstone from Billingham Teesside died in August 2023 after three visits to an urgent care center where doctors repeatedly diagnosed her with gastroenteritis. The Newcastle University student, who wanted to become a barrister, lawyer, actually had a blocked intestine that could have been treated with surgery. Her mother, Susan Enstone, told an inquest that staff were preoccupied with the football on TV rather than caring for her daughter. Libby had been fit and healthy before returning from a trip to London with her boyfriend on August 16th when she began vomiting and experiencing severe pain. Her mother called 111 2 days later and brought her to North Tees Hospital Urgent Care Center, where she was prescribed anti-sickness medication without being examined. Her family returned that evening, and a doctor diagnosed gastroenteritis before placing her on a saline drip. She was discharged at 1:30 a.m., only to vomit black liquid in the car park. A female member of the staff then came up to me and told me that they had thought she was just a time waster, her mother said. Yeah, just a time waster. And you know what? I imagine they get a lot of time wasters. I imagine when you provide free health care to everybody for whatever, I bet they get a lot of people that come in with tummy aches. I bet they get a lot of people. And we heard this from hospitals here in the United States. We had callers call in, tell us that they worked in a hospital in Denver, and we're seeing daily dozens and dozens of illegal immigrants coming in for the most minor concerns. It was their doctor, and it was their, like, you know, daily pediatrician or, you know, whatever, everyday doctor. So if they had the sniffles, they got a cold, they just go to the emergency room. So, well, you know, emergency rooms are supposed to be for, like, catastrophic things, for things that you can't make an appointment for. Instead, you're sitting there with a broken leg while, you know, whoever from Guatemala is there getting a prescription for whatever disease he brought with him. So, yeah, I bet they do get a lot of time wasters. I bet they get a lot of people who just go to the hospital when they don't need to, because they can, because it doesn't cost them anything. Just add that. Add that to the number of problems compounding up on top of one another. Which, and I don't even understand this. So they let her out at 1:30 a.m. She vomits black liquid in the parking lot. A woman comes up to her and is like, oh, we just thought she was wasting time. But then it says they brought Libby back to the urgent care center at 2:30 p.m. So I guess she still went home. She was totally exhausted and very weak. After speaking with staff, they decided to take her to A&E, which is ER, to the emergency room, where they waited as many as 9 hours to be seen. Her parents visited the ward the following day and claimed staff were watching a Women's World Cup penalty shootout on television. Libby was later allowed to go home but continued feeling unwell. She said she was scared and asked if she was going to die, her mother told the inquest. I laughed. I told her not to be daft. Minutes later, Libby collapsed and paramedics were called, but she could not be saved. An independent medical expert found Libby had been unable to open her bowels for several days, which should have alerted doctors that she did not have gastroenteritis, as diarrhea is a typical symptom. The report concluded that multiple opportunities were missed to scan her stomach, and surgery could have successfully treated her condition. Dr. Michael Stewart, Group Chief Medical Officer for the NHS Trust, offered an unreserved and sincere apology for the missed opportunities in Libby's care. Coroner Claire Bailey said the hospital's failure to consider anything other than gastroenteritis amounts to gross failures in her care. The coroner accepted that procedures have since improved at the trust. Like, what do you say about a country so thoroughly dysfunctional? What do you say about a country whose NHS routinely kills people with easily solvable problems that is so, you know, overburdened that people have to wait 18 weeks in some cases to even see a doctor in the first place. And yet it's upheld as the single most impressive and well-functioning program in the entire British government. And yet it is borne down by literally millions of foreigners who have never paid into it once and yet use it as their, you know, everyday doctor about whatever the hell they want. What do you do about a country who has a national healthcare system that just kills the people that it treats, who have a police force that arrests the victims of the crimes rather than the perpetrators, of an immigration force that welcomes in hundreds and hundreds of hostile adult male foreigners on a daily basis, that just got rid of jury trials and just abolished the House of Lords and is just systematically destroying every part of that society that hasn't already been thoroughly destroyed by this point. What do you do? What do you say? What is the solution to this? The solution has to be a wholesale, complete, comprehensive destruction of the system and a rebuilding of a new one. It has to be. You cannot tell me there's a better way. Unless, no, see, I don't even think, because I genuinely don't think that there's any hope for the UK outside of civil war. Because I was going to moderate. I was going to say, well, Restore actually seems to take this stuff seriously and actually seems to want to do the things that, you know, they want to do. But that's what Brexit was like too. They won Brexit. Nothing changed. Why should anything change this time? And tell you what, if it does change, if they do get Rupert Lowe in, if Restore does take over Parliament and they implement mass deportation measures, do you think they'll go quietly? Do you think the people in the UK will bow their heads and obey? Or do you think they'll fight back with all of the weapons that they have stashed in their mosques? I think the UK needs to be ready to fight one way or another.
Then at midnight, Alex Jones was thrown out and locked out of his InfoWars studio along with his crew after the 8-year-long legal battle trying to shut him down and censor him is coming to a close. And liberal media are celebrating with headlines like this. The lights go out at Alex Jones InfoWars, and InfoWars.com, the domain name, now has a message that just says off air. But these people don't know anything about Alex Jones, because if you just go to alexjoneslive.com, the website looks very similar to the old InfoWars website. And look at there!
there is a live feed of his show, the Alex Jones Show, now just not using the InfoWars name, where he is continuing. It hasn't missed a beat. If you go to the Apple App Store and the Android App Store and search for AJN Live, you can download the new Alex Jones Live app, where you can still listen to his show streamed live on your phone. Or you can just find and follow Alex Jones on Twitter, X, where he still has 4.5 million followers, because despite the lawyer's attempts to try to take his personal account, they failed. And you can see there the live icon around his profile photo shows that he is live streaming the show there on repeat 24/7.
There is a war raging for the future of humanity. We have opened a new front at alexjoneslive.com. They thought they could silence us. They thought they could drive us off the air. They failed. We are back, stronger, louder, unbroken. Find the feeds. Hear the broadcast. Share the signal. AlexJonesLive.com. The coordinates of freedom.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle, AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.